Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our first item tonight is to vote on an inter-district transfer hearing. Do we have a motion?
I move approval to uphold the denial. I'll second that.
Okay, Dee Dee and Cindy. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
Abstain.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any agenda changes, additions, or deletions?
None this evening.
Okay, public comments. Anyone here who would like to speak to items not on the agenda? Wow, we're just going right through. Huh? Okay, we have our superintendent's reports.
I want to start this evening by welcoming Josh Selva-Rockland. Did I say it right?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome, Josh. We're thrilled to have you. Josh is our student board rep from Soquel High School and will be serving on the board this school year. Student voice is tremendously important to us as a governing team, and your contributions will help inform our decision-making and all kinds of things as we move forward in the school year. We really appreciate you taking the time to be here to be a part of that. So welcome.
Welcome, Josh.
My superintendent's reports are grounded in the 6 district goals. And tonight I'm going to be talking about 3 of them in particular. Goal number 1, we had our first Bayside district leadership team meeting of the year. That's not the full Bayside vertical team, but the central office administrative team and Heather, our TOSA, or science TOSA, who supports us in our work to implement NGSS. We were in conversation with the Bayside team, our coaches there, to talk to onboard Dorothy and to talk about what we're going to be doing over the course of the year around the 3 goals that we established. We had a county secondary superintendents meeting, an informal gathering around career technical education and how we can continue to collaborate as we transition to district-run programs. We talked about, we had a Santa Cruz County College Commitment Steering Committee meeting, and we were working on setting our collective goals around college and career readiness for this school year and the action plans that we'll be putting in place. The principals reviewed the embargo CASPER results this last week, and we're developing plans for sharing with both staff and parents as we're allowed to share that information. You'll also see, the board will also see a presentation on the CASP results soon. On Monday at the GOAL board meeting, GOAL is the new name of the Adult Ed Consortium. It's Greater Opportunities for Adult Learning. That's what it stands for. The work, one of our board members is from WIB, and the Workforce Investment Board, and you presented a very interesting report on the career sectors in our community, where there is the most job growth, North County, and kind of salaries to affordability, which is problematic in our county. Goal number 4, as we work to develop a highly collaborative professional culture focused on supporting effective teaching, I met with trustees Perez Guarnados and Schoenig about our November curriculum open house study session. We're excited about getting that together as we prepare to have presentations on both science and social studies at that November meeting and computer science. We're going to do a board candidate district orientation on the 18th next week, Tuesday. Similar to the one that we did when we had a vacancy last fall. Goal number five, tonight we'll have a presentation on workforce housing planning, but we also have, Pat and I had a meeting this week with Jane Barr from Eden Housing. Jane is a county office of education trustee, and she works for Eden Housing and has been kind of advising us and talking to us about what nonprofits like Eden Housing could do in terms of potentially supporting the district. And goal number six, a lot of things around this as well. Today, Pat and I met with the PCS board president and PCS principal, so Tom Morell and Simon Fletcher, about our facilities use agreement with them, and just had a really, it was a pretty brief conversation, but we'll be bringing forward a new FUA, very, very similar to the one that we've had, because it's working for both of our organizations. And talking about a longer term, we had a 3-year term on this one, and talking about doing a 5-year term. We'll bring that back to you soon. I met with the education president and vice president this last week for our monthly meeting. We appreciate their continued support. We're working with them on a Warriors night for the district, which would be a fundraiser for the foundation. Back to school nights, there's been a bunch of them and lots of great things happening on our campuses, lots of opportunities for parents to come see what's happening in classrooms at the start of the school year. Central office work is continuing our work on strategic communication, revising our, and finalizing our plans for the year. Dorothy and Nancy and Dorothy's assistant Sarah and I spent a lot of time digging into the website today, mm-hmm. and working to make it more user-friendly and more intuitive about where you'll find things. And Sarah's been really helpful, and so has Nancy, in making that real. And we're also in collaboration with Parks and Rec to revise our long-standing MOU with them to better reflect the needs of both of our organizations. It goes back a long time, and there's some things that we haven't spelled out really clearly what we're trying to spell out together, and we'll be bringing that to you soon as well. And that's it.
Thank you. Hey, student trustee, it's your turn. Would you like to make a report or just introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Josh. I've been to say before. I am the class of 2019 president at Soquel, and our community right now is primarily focusing on our homecoming, which is October 12th. So we've been putting a lot of work into that. And that is pretty much all that I would have to say about Soquel at the moment.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Board members?
I just welcome Josh. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
And Jeremy? Yeah. Cindy?
I noted this in the consent agenda. I just wanted to commend the SoCal High School community on its training with the National Coalition Building for the anti-bias training, and that really showed great unity in that there was a WASP report that referenced some needs, and then there is a diversity task force that echoed those needs, and then students and staff put together the training, and it seemed like it was very successful. So I just thought it was a great proactive effort in terms of anti-bias efforts on campus. And then just a little shout out to the teachers who are piloting the different English language programs throughout the district, and had some really good feedback from some teachers at Bayview with their initial efforts with the Reader's Workshop, and enjoyed the back to school night at Westlake, and enjoy sitting up here with Josh for the coming year. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I too want to welcome you, Josh. It's so wonderful to have a student perspective on our board, and I'm looking forward to the celebration at Harbor High School on Friday to celebrate their anniversary.
Welcome, Josh. I, of course, have been attending some of the different sporting events. I use the word "of course." I'm sorry, this came out that way. I was very pleased to go to the Soquel High game versus Evergreen at Soquel High. There were over 30 students on the cheer squad, over 100 students on the band. The football team is nowhere near those numbers, but they're working on it. They seem to be very much impressed with their coach. who helps to seem to keep them grounded to their studies in campus. So I'm very happy to report hearing of that. That was really a pretty exciting evening. And then pivoted last week over to Santa Cruz High, where I was happy to take a quick tour because everyone was so excited to show how the gym is coming along and some of the different plans, seeing how their tax dollars are serving them through the bond. They expressed the excitement over the field. Their band was very sizable. I saw at least 70 children, and they had young adults, on the field. And they had quite the cheer squad. It is very impressive to see so many students connected and having a place to go. As a parent and a community member, that excites me to see. Also, was invited by the tennis team at Soquel High to have just a very informal ribbon cutting for the new courts. So the tennis community is incredibly excited. They can see the beautiful courts from the freeway at Harbor, and the girls' team has 47 students who have gone out for girls' tennis, and I think the numbers are growing at all three comprehensive high schools. That excites me as a tennis player. The boys' team, the coach showed up, and he was very kind to say some words to also impress upon the students what their families did by voting for these parcel taxes, and pointed to the new nets and the screens, and just really a very positive piece. So those were all very feel-good moments around some of our co-curriculars that I always enjoy. I'd like to thank Mr. Klein. We had our superintendent trustee visit there today. He's always very kind. We did a walkthrough around the campus, and the students there, when I asked Mr. Klein to tell me what he's most proud of at Santa Cruz High, he answered without any thought, the students. And so it tells me that the focus in the district is in the right area and we're moving along. Okay. Lastly, I am very excited to go to the Harbor High 50th anniversary. People in the community are talking about it, and I would just mention, and don't really know why, but my whole dental community from orthodontist to endodontist to dentist all went to Harvard High School. Anyway, yes, thank you.
I would just also like to welcome Josh here. Nice to have you. And since I wasn't here last week, and last week was the first week, I would also like to welcome Dorothy here. Nice to have you too. That's all for this time.
Okay, well, a highlight for me these last 2 weeks, I went to the implicit bias workshop, and it was a follow-up to the culturally responsible organizations workshop put on by Project Thrive and the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force. What impressed me was, of course, the content, but also the people that were there. It was many community groups were there, service groups, law enforcement, education, city government, probation, justice system, just a great opportunity to communicate about issues of bias. Schools Plus is having their annual recognition for the grant recipients who received grants last year. It's on September 29th. I'm always impressed by the hard work that the teachers have done and their creativity. It's just really inspiring to go, and if anybody has an opportunity, I would encourage you to go. And we have a number of our teachers from Santa Cruz City Schools that received grants last year. That's all for me. Our next item is the approval of the minutes from August 29th.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, Dee and Patty. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Okay. Thank you.
The next item is the consent agenda. Are there items that trustees would like to ask questions about or pull? Jeremy.
Well, I was looking for a roof, but there, the roof
Merit question. I got that figured out. 8.1.3, I had just a question about mobile modular at 94K. And then 3.6, Phil Allegri, Harbor High School locker improvement security. I do have a general question about security and whether or not. So we can do the easy one first, shall we?
Go ahead.
All right.
Unless great. Are there other questions or I want to get listed. Who else?
Jeremy, can you? Oh, I'm sorry. Tell me the number of the first
8.1.3 purchase orders, bids, and quotes. It's 190076 mobile modular at $94,000.00.
And Sheila, you had a
8.2.5. I just had a question.
Okay.
And I forgot to write down the number for the other one, so I'll have to look and find it.
Okay, we'll start with the 8.1.3, Jeremy.
Sure. I see a mobile modular of $94,000, some annual lease payments on portable classrooms, capital facilities fund. How many classrooms where?
They're throughout the district, Jeremy. I'll get you an exact count of those. I'll send it to you. But this is an annual cost we incur for paying for rentals of portables at multiple sites. The good news is once we get through all the construction, we get portables off our sites, we will no longer incur that close to $100,000 a year.
Perfect. Thank you. Want me to go to the next one, or do you want to go in order?
Go ahead to the next one.
All right. Then the next one is a little bit broader, because it's not so much that this is item 8.3.6. It's not so much that it's the money, but I'd like to read to you. Approve the Phil Allegri Electric Incorporated proposal for running power and Cat 6 cable for the, and I emphasize it, new security system at Harbor High School. Are we going to have security systems at all the schools, and is this the first phase of that? And if so, have we discussed this as a board, whether we want security cameras at each site and how many and what they'll be filming and when they'll be filming and what our policies are around that? Is that something that we want to pull and talk about as a board? Because if we approve this, I'm assuming we're approving. This sounds to me a little bit like policy, or am I missing something? Long question, I apologize.
Yes, I'm not sure we're going to start first on the policy side, or if you want to talk about it. My recollection is that we shared with the board that we'd be moving forward with bringing some cameras, limited number of cameras at Harbor as a pilot. And so this is putting the infrastructure for that pilot for these to function on our campus.
Right.
But we've not had a longer conversation about cameras throughout the entire district as a board. But under the umbrella of security, under the umbrella of the bond and security, this pilot, we wanted to see how these function so we could have a bigger conversation about more of those throughout the campuses by doing this as a pilot.
I don't know if it's appropriate for me to ask a follow-up question. I think I'd like to pull this then because I have a couple questions. Not that I will ultimately disagree or agree, but I'd just like to talk.
Okay, so you'd like item 8.3.6.
Correct.
Okay.
That's all for me. Thank you.
Okay. Now 8.2.5, Sheila.
Okay. And that is the only one for me. The other question is for the regular business.
Okay.
This was the item about the reading instruction and the bringing in of the Orton Gilligan reading instruction for, I believe it's a special ed teachers, or it's a general across.
It's both special ed and general ed.
But it's a certain percentage. It's not everybody.
It's not everybody.
Okay. And so I just wanted to make it clear why we're doing it at this point. I actually have very positive reactions to having that particular training. So I wanted to have some idea of why now, why are we doing this now. It tends to be a pretty intensive program and therefore may mean we're putting more financial backing to it. So I wanted to ask about that. And the last question is, how do we this is just my curiosity about how it works. How do we bring that together with such things as the Bayview reading and writing workshop piece, and how do we bring those together if we train people in doing the art in Gillingham and it's different from the other? So,
well, there is new legislation that requires that districts implement a plan around dyslexia. So that part of the intent of that is that we ensure that students are identified quickly if they do have dyslexia, and that teachers are able to then intervene and provide those supports that students need to be able to be successful and to be able to read and progress to read at grade level. As far as how it fits into programs, Bayview is piloting Lucy Calkins' Reader's Workshop, and this would just be another, you know, a strategy and awareness on the part of teachers to be able to address, just like they do with all students, if there is a disability or something that manifests itself, and it's part of any sort of sound pedagogy around making sure students have what they need and differentiating for them. So,
I'm not suggesting that they would necessarily clash, but it is a very useful, very good, but dramatically defined program, I guess is the best way to put it. So, and it's one that involves an intensive work with kids to get them up fast, with the idea that, you know, you really have to be looking at catching the disability early. So I'm just wondering, have we actually looked to see if there's going to be any problems coming with the two, or are we just going to leap in and see where we
get? This is kind of turning into a discussion. Do you want to pull it, or do you want
to... I just wanted to... Is it too much of a question?
Well, usually it's a question and
I was just
an answer.
To clear
this is a discussion.
We could have offline. We could have more of a discussion about it.
Would that work for you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great question. I mean, what you're saying is absolutely true. And so it does, you know, just like any other intervention program, what you put in place for the student and how you implement it is the strength of that program. Mm-hmm. And so definitely we can provide more information, have further discussion around it.
Okay. And I would like to, if it becomes something that has to do with funding, I would like that to come back to us, you know, so that we know. That's it.
Okay. All right. It's an action item, so do we have a motion?
Move approval with the exception of 8.3.6 pulled for later.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Thank you.
Patty and Dee Dee. And this is a roll call, so Josh, do you feel comfortable voting on this?
Yes.
Okay. Public?
Yeah, was anyone from the public?
Thanks.
Aye.
We now report closed session actions.
The Board of Education heard information on inter-district transfer appeal hearing student number one in order to take action on this item when the open session began. The Board of Education did not receive any information on certificated classified management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. And the Board of Education did not receive any information for public employee discipline, dismissal, release, or complaint.
Thank you. Okay, now we have a staff report on inter-district transfers, open enrollment.
Sorry.
We'll probably turn that mic on, Greg.
Good evening. All right, we are live. Good evening, Greg O'Meara, Director of Student Services. In tonight's presentation, staff will provide statistical information over a four-year period in the areas of open enrollment and inter-district transfers of all of our schools. To clarify, the inter-district transfer conversation and the data provided tonight will center primarily on students entering our district. As we continue to accumulate information, log that information, and analyze that information in regards to students exiting the district. We thought that it would be helpful to review some terms or definitions germane to our conversation tonight. The term open enrollment refers to the movement of students within our school district from one school to the other. For example, Galt to Westlake, Westlake to De La Vega, Santa Cruz to Soquel. Those are all movements within our school district. The term inter-district transfer, and I will refer to that from this point forward as IDTs in general. IDTs center on students that move in and out of our district boundaries, and those movements require an agreement between this district and any other district. And again, we will center our discussion this evening on movement to our school district. In both scenarios, the open enrollment and the inter-district transfer, denials or approvals are based on space and program availability. All right, this next sheet of information and numbers, and there is quite a bit here, so I think folks have these numbers in front of them, very difficult to see. But this information reflects the number of open enrollments, open enrollment transfer requests at the elementary level from each of our elementary schools to all of the other elementary schools. So it's quite a bit of numbers being calculated here. On average, over the past 4 years, there were slightly over 78 open enrollment requests at the elementary level per year. The reason for the majority of these open enrollment requests at the elementary level are primarily due to logistical convenience or logistical necessity of our families and our students in the school district. And this would include child care, it would include parents working routes, or other family obligations at the elementary level. I do want to point out a couple things. For nearly all, or certainly a large majority or a large percentage of these enrollment requests, these open enrollment requests, the district was able to honor and accommodate our families. Another thing I'd like to point out is that over the four-year period, there seems to be a trend of heavy movement into De La Viega and a heavy amount of movement into Baby School. However, in this past year of 18-19, we saw a significant dip when compared to the previous 3 years. Starting in 15-16, we had a total of 93. Then we moved to 77 in 16-17. We climbed a little bit to 91 requests for open enrollment in 17-18. However, this year, we dropped significantly to only 52 open enrollment requests at the elementary level. As we look at middle school open enrollment, we do see on average just right around 50 per year. Similar to our elementary population, however, are consistent with our elementary population. Many of these requests, if not most, are based on logistical convenience or logistical necessity of our families. And again, very, very similar to our elementary scenarios, we are able to honor almost all of these requests. The data here does indicate over the 4 years, in fact, in each and every year over the 4 years, it does indicate that there are larger numbers of students moving from B40 to Mission Hill versus the opposite scenario. However, we do see a drop in the most recent year, our current year, we do see another drop as we did in our elementary open enrollment requests. Now, looking at the comprehensive high school open enrollment, we have an average, over the last 4 years, annually, we have an average of 256 requests for open enrollment. That is movement within our school district or within our high schools, our different high schools. Now, the reasons for open enrollment at the high school level, they seem to expand a bit. Okay? We not only have the logistical reasons of convenience and the logistical reasons of necessity, but we also start to see preferences for programs. And we also are seeing, obviously, as peer groups become defined, we also see requests based on peer groups and wanting to be with a certain peer group for extra support. Over the previous 4 years, we do see heavy traffic in each of the 4 years. Our heaviest movement is from Soquel High School to Harbor High School. Now, let's take a look at the next few tables and slides. We're going to be taking a look at inter-district transfers, or IDTs, and again, specifically those that are entering our school district. We take a look at our elementary IDTs. We certainly do not see very large numbers. You know, we see 22, 29, 23, and we dropped to 8 in our current year. A large percentage of these IDTs at the elementary level are in fact children of district employees. This is a specific breakdown of where our elementary students are coming from when they join us via the IDT agreements. I do want to point out that in this particular table of values, we are including sixth graders because of the way our organizational structure is laid out. So that would explain why in 18-19 there were only 8 IDTs at the elementary level. This table says there are quite more than 8 because we are including sixth graders in this table. And clearly, Soquel Union provides most of our IDTs at the elementary level. Looking at our middle schools, at the IDTs at the middle school, we see an increasing number of IDTs over the previous 4 school years, including this school year, and we actually have a good number this year. Again, this particular data table does, again, include sixth graders. Just thought it would be better to include them in this table because they are physically in the buildings at B40 and Mission Hill Middle School, even though technically the sixth graders may be considered elementary students in other aspects. Now let's take a look at the high school IDTs, the high school students that are coming to us from other school districts. On average, there have been just over 131 IDTs approved annually. This data indicates an increasing number over the previous 4 years, with our current year actually being the highest. So when I said there was an average of 131 per year, really it does not depict an accurate average, because this year we approved, we took in 187 students from neighboring high school districts. compared to 107, 107, and 124 just last year. So there was a significant spike this current school year. When we look, as we did in the elementary and middle school levels, at where our students are coming from, at the high school level, clearly Pajaro Valley leads the pack with 158 just this year. So that kind of gives you a nice breakdown of where our students are coming from at the high school level. Before I ask for questions or offer a question and discussion, I do want to say that we continue. I want to say daily, because that's true. We continue daily to monitor the exchange and the movement of students within our district. And we continue to monitor, and we will continue to monitor, the movement of students, particularly into our district and out of our district on the IDTs. Obviously, both the open enrollments and the IDTs have a significant impact, or can have a significant impact, on our staffing decisions, as well as our programs and our facilities and our services that we offer students in the areas of social emotional support. So at this time, I will open it up to any questions, comments.
Hey, you're first, Sheila.
I just wanted to make sure I understood what you said and see whether it just applied to elementary or elementary and secondary. You said that the vast majority of the IDTs are employees of this district? Children of the employees of this district?
Yes, at the elementary level, that's true.
Just at the elementary level?
Correct.
Does that exist in the high school level too, but there's just more reasons?
At the high school level, there are more approved at the high school level due to space and capacity that allows us to do that at the high school level. It does not allow us to do that at the elementary level. But at the secondary level, including middle school and high school, there are still a good number of employees, students.
Both of our contracts provide for professional courtesy that allows employees to bring students into our school district. It's in both of our contracts.
So it's allowed, and everybody who wants it gets it, mm-hmm. whether secondary or elementary.
Correct.
If space
is available. We can't go over our state cap on class size in elementary.
Right. Okay.
Hey, Abby.
Thank you, Greg. Did I miss a slide? Do we have the inter-district transfers out? Meaning in secondary, meaning where are any students who would be eligible to go to Santa Cruz City Schools? How many are leaving us into other districts? And just for an overview of maybe some programmatic things that draw in the opposite direction, I'm happy to see that we have so many in, but I'm just curious to know if any are leaving and what takes them away.
And that is a terrific question, and one that we anticipated is leaving. I will say that information does exist. It exists primarily right now in hard copy. And the reason we were able to extrapolate the incoming data is that data is automatically entered into our system when that student shows up and we enroll that student. So that student gets a code in our informational system. However, with all the students that are coming to us with inter-district transfers out, up until now, there has not been a process of logging that, and so we have hard copies of that information. And we are actually currently in the process of accumulating all that information, so you have that for our study session in June.
And just to follow up, by the accumulation of that information, will it be setting a systems for you to have it within our systems, or will it always be hard copy?
No. We've been talking about the last, in preparation of this presentation and then with the January study session, we are going to implement that as a piece of our outgoing IDT process. So when that hard copy does come across our desk, or it gets sent back to us from the receiving district, that will be part of our digital process as well.
Thank you. Other questions? Go ahead, Cindy.
Thank you. I had a question about the open enrollment process. Is there a period within which parents have to apply for open enrollment, or is it open-ended?
Yes.
Yes.
There is a priority window which will kick off in January, and technically it concludes in March for priority enrollment. However, reality does kick in, and we handle these requests pretty much ongoing. They're seasonal and they're dying down right now. We are talking about putting a stricter deadline on the start of the school year shuffle, because that tends to, again, it affects our staffing decisions and our capacity in our program. So we do want to take a look at putting a tighter deadline on that process.
Okay, Deb?
I was just wondering, how does Paro feel about this?
I haven't had a conversation with an administrator in Paro about it since I was an assistant superintendent services. There was new legislation about 5 years ago that required that we develop MOUs between districts, separate from, we used to just use the paper as our MOU. We had to have a separate MOU, and it took us about 3 years after that legislation came in place to make the agreement as a county superintendents about what that MOU would be. And it's up for renewal right now and is on our agenda tomorrow at Soups Council. So there will be another conversation about IDTs and impact, so I could better answer that probably after tomorrow's meeting.
Will you let us know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now I'm going to open a public hearing on textbook sufficiency in the elementary and secondary districts. It's a public hearing. And is there a public who would like to comment? Seeing none, close the public hearing. And our next item is the resolution for elementary and high school district textbook sufficiency. Board have questions?
So, if I may, I just wanted to comment that we are required by Ed Code by the eighth week of the school year to determine whether or not we have sufficient in the textbooks and instructional materials. And this year, we actually started a new process where we have consulted with each site individually. To have them evaluate and determine whether or not they have the sufficient materials. And though, as you saw, we had some growing enrollment at some of our high schools, and we did have to order some additional textbooks for that reason, we currently have sufficient materials, and even when we were in the process of ordering, students had what they needed to be able to access the course and the standards.
Thank you. Patty?
And so just a quick question around that. Can you just give us an overview of what that meant at each site to confirm that piece?
So what that meant was a process was put in place where we redefined what sufficient instructional materials means. Because when you just say it, it's like, well, we have to kind of deconstruct that for the principals. And I'm not going to go through all of that here unless you want me to share that. And in addition to speaking with them individually, they had to basically go into a document, look at the definition, and a lot of them had questions, and they called about, well, what does this mean, what does that mean? And then they just essentially said, yes, we have sufficient materials based on my understanding of the definition. Or they said, yes, but we had to order 10 more biology textbooks. And because the eighth week into the school year is October 10th, we were able to get everything in place by this board meeting. For the schools, just really quickly, Patty, if you don't mind, I want to just share that we had to order for Santa Cruz High School some trig analytic books. And we had to order at Soquel High School some biology and chemistry.
And follow up, mm-hmm. if that's okay. I just wanted to ask Josh if there was any coursework that he noted that he didn't have any books. It was the students who brought certain things to my attention last year. Because you're in a large school.
I've had the experience at Soquel High of possibly in my 4 years of backing away from textbooks in general and then just being a classroom necessity, if at all. So, for example, in my chemistry class that I'm in right now, today was the first day I actually looked at a textbook. I did have the problem last year of needing more physics books, but that was solved in less than a week. So I feel that at Soquel, the textbook solution is pretty under control, in my opinion.
Thank you.
It takes usually about 10 days once an order is in to get the material delivered.
So. Okay, any other questions? Do we have a motion?
Approval.
Deb?
Second.
And Sheila?
Thank you.
And it is a roll call. And
aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Okay, we're moving on to item 8.5.2.1, the staff report on workforce housing feasibility.
Thank you, everybody. I'm really excited to talk about this potential project for the district. And joining tonight are Nancy Pinkston from DCG and also Mark Carroll from Dale Scott. Nancy is new to DCG. DCG helped us with an analysis, which is brought and presented to you a few months back. And Mark has helped us with multiple financing opportunities for COPs, for bonds being passed, and so forth. So really appreciate their time and their help so far on this project. Just walk through that. So this is kind of a quick recap of what we've done so far. This was presented to you. DCG came in. This is a quick recap, and we talked about multiple sites. The one site we thought was the most optimal site for the district to pursue in terms of for this project. So after that first presentation to you, DCG spent some time to you, working in addition with Ralph LaRue from Matty Architecture, spoke to you briefly as well too, so he's helped us kind of on a time, hourly basis, just for some very simple conceptual renderings, what this project might look like. And later on, we'll talk about next steps. We're going to talk about an RFP process for the actual architect for this particular project. So this slide kind of captures what we've accomplished so far. Maximizing the highest and best use of the most feasible site to solve the current workforce housing demands. We utilize the SCCS Employee Housing Survey. And then with Ralph's help and Nancy's help, we looked at what an optimal configuration might be for this project. And then we worked more and looked at some of the financial costs of how that might look in terms of cost for this room, what instruments we might utilize to fund this project. So very excited to share with you what it's going to pencil out financially. That's what this next slide's going to talk about. Nancy has also worked with and consulted with local Bay Area multifamily affordable housing contractors to talk about costs, and that's been shared with Mark. We've woven that in. And in parallel with this, the superintendent shared with you too, we also had conversations with Jane from, I can't remember Jane's last name. From Eden Housing. And the numbers that we're sharing with you tonight here are very similar to the numbers that Jane shared with us as well, just all conceptual, but very similar in terms of cost, affordability. We've looked at salaries, schedules for certificate classified, and looked at what affordable housing might look like in terms of opportunities for this project. In addition, we shared, this was shared, we had discussions with neighbors in the Natural Bridges community. We solicited their feedback.
And we held a discussion with the City of Santa Cruz and Barry, I think last meeting, the superintendent shared too, that along with Measure H, there's a possibility that we will get funding from that initiative that will help offset some of these costs. So I'm going to let Mark and Nancy speak to some of the dollars and cents of this, because we looked at a model exclusive of that funding, what that might look like, and it looks very positive for us in being able to do this. When we look at what these rent revenues will generate relative to the cost of the project. Okay? So that's this next slide kind of speaks to it. So if you want to jump in and answer your
question. Yeah. I can start on projecting rental incomes, keeping in mind teacher salaries, right, end goal of being affordability. So typically affordability, just in case anybody wasn't aware, it's not to exceed more than 30% of somebody's gross annual income. So with respect to salary schedule, I went through, because that's what I love to do, is the data crunching, the numbers, and finding opportunities for leverage there. Went through and see where those align based off of the salary schedule of new hires, and then also teachers that have been with the district for a while, and then overlapped those with Santa Cruz's area mean income and what those levels then look like from a 60%, 70%, and 80% AMI level. I know that was spoken to multiple times of, and it's not just, I don't want to say it's not just limited to Santa Cruz. This is a California state problem where teachers are actually making too much for the low-income housing tax credit units. So going back to demand and asking the district to leverage debt, right, that from a long-term asset standpoint, we need to make sure it's viable, so there's still demand there. The good thing for Santa Cruz is, in comparison to other parts of the state where I'm working, the cost of construction's lessened. It's still expensive because it's still Bay Area compared to the rest of the U.S., but if I'm looking across the state. So that was the one thing that I was able to get some leverage on, was the cost of construction, because originally some of the numbers we were getting were extremely high. They can go up right now with President Trump's tariffs. We're seeing some increases, a little bit on lumber, not too much yet, and also on steel. However, I still think that will level out because supply starts for new multifamily has gone down. So what that means is these construction companies that were being bid out, there's way more opportunity now to get to a better number. So that's to be briefed out from a bid once the RFP and once that's selected from construction companies and can go to bid. So a lot of the numbers I got, my numbers construction-wise from a large Bay Area construction company, and then also pass those by from another one. Not naming you all as a school district and keeping that confidential. So that total, going back to net rental income, that's projecting those unit mixes. And then construction costs, then those two playing out within the COP scenario. And Mark here, I'll let him cover bond rates and how those have changed, and then into coverage for this project specifically.
Do you have questions on each presentation? Or
what do you prefer?
You're welcome to ask, Jeremy.
Well, I mean, I'm just kind of doing back of the envelope stuff here.
Yeah.
You got gross rents, $82 million. You got 80 units. That's $1 million a unit divided by 30 years. That's $330,000 a year. You're looking at $2,800 a month average rent or something like that.
So I can, the actual rent levels I have.
Yeah, I'd like to see those.
And that's, yeah, of course. So that's off of, again, and within respect to the salary schedule. So, for example, on a studio, 80% of HUD AMI would be $1,564.
All right.
That's total. If we took into account the utility allowance, that's then less than that. A one-bedroom would be about $1,675. Okay, less than that because of utility allowance. Two bedroom, again with two bath, would be $2,010.
Oh, okay.
These are not outside of range.
Okay.
I am projecting. Jane and I have a little difference on numbers, but only goes back to what the city planning discussions have been, which is based on density, number one, for entitlements to get the site ready. And then number two, parking required. which is actually a really large consideration with multifamily. So for the different various markets, and I apologize, I'm a newbie to California. I've lived in 8 states across the U.S., and a lot of my projects for multifamily have been in California, Missouri, Texas, Arkansas, and then Kansas. So I'm lucky that I've had that background. However, I also can say a lot of teachers from what we've heard, not all of them use their cars. However, with respect to what the city wants, right, and what the city knows of their community, the planner, Elizabeth, has been very, very informative. So the city's fully on board. It's just going back to knowing the teacher demand, teacher renter household demand, and how to best to go that way. But back to your questions of rents, hopefully I answered that.
Can I answer too?
Yeah.
That we are planning on, and we've talked about this being both for our teachers and our classified unit on a proportional level based on the total number of employees. So I just want to add that it is for our faculty, but also for our support team.
I'm not seeing the $82 million gross rents, but maybe my numbers are wrong.
So annual net revenue is $1,000,001. So gross rents, I mean, yeah. So we can provide that.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
But for this slide, it was one of those things that a large graph of numbers tends to overwhelm sometimes. So we can definitely provide that.
I have a question here.
Okay. Pardon me if this is a really simplistic question, but this isn't an area I'm real familiar with. And when you said that teachers were above, they earned above the affordability index, are you therefore suggesting
above the first 60% AMI? So when we look at low-income housing tax credits, the California State Treasurer will only award based off of 30%, which is very low income, 40%, 50%, and 60% of the area median income. Okay? So knowing that not all of these staff employees and teacher employees qualify, they overqualify. And you also have to remember it's also based on household. So if I look at a married teacher or I look at a married staff person and their combined incomes are greater than that, then they won't qualify for the 60% AMI.
So what?
That's what I meant by that.
But what do you mean by that? Like, if we do not have enough people who qualify for the 60% AMI, it means what?
So it means you wouldn't go to broach it for the low income housing tax credits because you wouldn't have the demand there.
And that would mean what in terms of the cost to us? That changes the cost dramatically?
And not dramatically, no. But just from a time perspective, there's also a lot of unknowns with LIHTC. And LIHTC, I mean low-income housing tax credits. They're a great avenue, but it sometimes shuts out people that are right in between it.
That's what I was thinking.
Right? So I have to go back to demand, right? And if I'm looking at teacher renter households and what that whole number is, because I like to look in depth at the data to make sure it's telling the full story, and I've seen at least 30 to 40 to 50% over, or you know, don't qualify for the 60%, that means they can't live there. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not.
If you use that funding source.
So, and we're not using that money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
right, that's what I want to understand.
So that's a whole other thing about if we're going to use that funding source, we're going to apply for that funding source. If we talk a little bit too about the ballot issue and the funding for the ballot issue relative to the affordability, then there's what we've talked to the city about is we believe that not all those units would qualify, but some of our next steps are, Sheila, are getting to a lot more of those details. Tonight we want to bring you kind of the big picture, and tonight was about giving you direction to move forward, to give you much more in-depth information to take the next step, because there's a lot of next steps to take.
So we will be getting some of that information, which, I mean, I find it, I trust you, but I also find it very interesting to understand that we're making choices, and it doesn't shut us out of something, it changes
right
our choices.
No.
Right.
Okay.
And it just goes back to, at the end of the day, who's the target population and what's the problem we're trying to address?
Right.
And at the end of the day, is the money accurately addressing that problem? Right? And
mm-hmm.
if not, then what are the routes going to be taken?
Right.
And all along I've talked about us not using state and federal tax credits because it would rule out so many of our employees
right
from accessing the
Right.
So that's basically what she's explaining, and we've said we don't want to go in that direction in terms of a funding source.
Right. I was just worried when you first said it that that meant therefore
right.
this wasn't viable. But it
right.
just changes what we're looking at. And right. yeah, mm-hmm. okay. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Mark, I don't know if you want to add to that anymore. I'll just quickly add, I mean, we're looking at, from our perspective, we're taking the rental income, we're backing out the costs that it'll take the district to operate, maintain the housing management company facility, and then structuring the bond payment or the COP payment so that it then would be covered, and in this case, there would be additional funding still coming off of the rents above and beyond what the district's annual COP payment is. So we'll kind of continue to adjust our models according to what happens with unit mix and the projected rental income and keep coming back to the district with, yes, you know, it's still affordable or it's still these pencils, or not try to find ways to make that work.
So I need to jump, I'll jump into the next slides really quickly. With the help of Maddie, this is a simple rendering of what the units might look like on the campus, and it's a 2.5-acre campus. So the parking that Nancy spoke to was taken consideration in this. There have been some preliminary conversations about the parking for this particular these structures. It's 82 units. We looked at a fairly simplistic model of 20 studio units, 41 bedroom units, and 20 two bedroom units, just for modeling purposes. And when we get into the next steps, we're going to talk a little too about doing another survey of staff. Nancy was kind of speaking to that, to really try and hit that demand that we have.
Just so it's on record, it's actually 28 studio for this reference, 28 studio, 32 one bedroom, and 22 bedroom.
And you'll see down on the right-hand side here, everybody, so this bottom right section over here, this is actually a project that Maddie is working on in Pittsburgh, California. So this is another housing project they're working on, so this is kind of a rendering of what this might look like. There's still a lot of work to do. We're having discussions, like Nancy said, talking to different construction firms. We're talking to modular construction companies as well, too. There's a big company that's on the old Alameda Naval Air Force Base that are building these modular types of housing structures. So looking at that cost, we think we can drive that cost down for construction by taking advantage of modular. It was interesting, we had the conversation with Jane, I think it was yesterday, Chris. She was suggesting that there's such demand now for the modular buildings that when you look at the stick-built costs, it's getting close to the modular costs. There's such demand for these that people drive their cost down, but so they can charge the price. So there's more steps for us to go. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I just want to say now I see where you get the $80 million. I didn't factor in the cost of living increase.
Yeah,
so what's
yeah.
your, is your COLA 2%?
It's like 3%.
We did 3.5 because
it.
So
that
there's no rent control necessarily, and then also...
Don't say that word.
But also, it's
dear
also,
gosh.
Also, if you go back to AMI, if I look at historical
okay,
changes
so
of the area...
You're factoring a 3% COLA.
Yes, and I purely base that from a market standpoint,
that
also
makes
thank
you.
We can do a lot of modeling, folks. Tonight is just about this higher level conceptual, getting your direction says, please proceed, and then we'll do next. And I'll jump to that next slide here, too.
But it would be nice if you could show us the rents today, and then, you know, using
yeah.
that 3% COLA, the rents in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years,
and these are purely based off of HUD rents, so
that's
the standard.
Got it.
And you might explain HUD, too. Does anyone understand HUD?
Hey, Deb.
A quick clarification. I think I understand, but modular is just prefab. So lifespan of a modular is equivalent to
just as long.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and
they're just efficiencies of scale are getting there, and there's also enough competition in modular that they're
now.
Yeah, so we're still getting a firm grip though on price because there's such hot demand. Now they're at capacity for what they can deliver, so that's been another issue.
Okay,
thank you. And mine is on the conceptual. This particular piece of the campus is 2.5 acres, you say, or 2.25,
right.
With just that one road. And is that
well, I know that
the back?
The community members asked Patty that if they asked for an easement back in this direction. Is that right, Chris? Am I Chris, can see.
Yeah, right there.
They asked for...
actually, see, between those buildings right there is what... In the middle?
Like where Ivietta is, the would they go through there?
They asked us to explore this, whether we'd be able to get an easement so that the exit could be here.
Going out to Delaware
as opposed to Swift.
Yeah.
We don't know if we'll be able to get that from the industry. You know, it's industrial in that area. We had a commercial. We don't know if we'll be able to get it or not. But that was an ask.
I think it's a smart thing to consider also from a fire code perspective. Mm-hmm. City fire departments like to see more access, and police officers like to see more access on multifamily developments.
So lots of work to do. Just really quickly, there's a big development going in off of Delaware.
Multiple
stories. This is a three-story model we're talking about as well.
And just to follow up to that, then, what would the actual number of housing capacity by these 80 or 82 units, do you think? How many people will be housed?
Is your question, Patty.
In the studio, would it be two in a one-bedroom?
A studio? Assuming one.
Couples?
Okay,
so one and studios could, because you know when you write those contracts for
all those things kind of like get into the covenants.
I'm just trying to think of the scope of how many people are being housed through this unit.
So for right now, you can assume one for a studio. Typically, we go one to two. So low end one on one bedroom, two on the high end for twos. So if I have 32 units for two, that's 64. So I have 64 people, a two-bedroom, I have 20 units for this model. So that's 40, so I'm at 104, and then 28. So I have over 130 people served, approximately. That's on 100. But then also, it goes back to the density allowed, right, for the city. But you guys, the great thing with talking with the city is because this is school district-owned land, you can, in essence, and... She did not want to completely tell me this. She was very nice and she said,
do what we want.
Exactly.
Yeah, the law states.
Exactly.
Well, that, excuse me, because that's on the record, is not my intent. But I know that the city rule does not rule the school district. The district's property won't be ruled by the school district and that of the board. So,
but
yes.
Going back to management, which Patrick was talking about, was management company, a different firm would come in, to oversee, you know, the stipulations and to serve the prioritize and serve those in most need that qualify. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right, and so I'm sorry.
I just want to see and think about those numbers in terms of we have about 800 employees,
mm-hmm.
and about half of them, I can't remember the exact percentage. I should look this up.
50% like own.
Yeah, 50% own.
Approximately, which is actually
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Well, for
it's
now,
so expensive.
Yeah.
Retire.
All
65 went
over,
right? I mean, retirement age.
And that's what we need to further serve that on to be able to approximate, right? Because it goes back to the teachers that have been lost and the teachers that still need to be served.
Okay.
Right. So quickly on Sheila's
Well, one of the questions is what you were heading towards. What of the amount of people that we could serve, what percentage of the people who need, do we know that yet? Or is that what we're looking into?
We're going to dig deeper into that.
Yeah, we're going to
okay.
dig.
So we just
that first bullet is, here's what is this additional staff survey specific to the renter population. We'll get some more detail.
So we at this point kind of figured out what we could do, and then we're going to see how that...
We're going to further refine it, Sheila. We're mm-hmm. going to talk about these additional access inclusive timeline. We're going to talk to the city about planning and design. And we're going to see what the result of that measure is, because that's really significant to us in terms of dollar amount.
And what about the rental measure? Is that going to figure into this at all, or do we know?
Before I spent legal money on that...
You want to see what happens?
I wanted direction from you tonight to know, because I believe we're exempt based on the language of the measure, but... I need to confirm that with legal counsel. When I first read the measure, I was very, very worried because if it would kind of, part of our goal with this and what we've been talking about the whole time is the goal is to support people with below market rents for 7 to 10 years so that they can save money for a down payment and get into the housing market. And then we have a place where we can bring in new young staff that haven't, you know, so it's not become a permanent residence for people, but a way for people to start in the school district, to be on our beginning salaries, and save money and get into the housing market and be you know, live in our community. And we have the landed fund that can help some people, you know, with matching down payments if people want to pursue that as a match as well. So I was concerned that the current measure on the ballot would impact our ability to use it in that kind of way. Because of relocation requirements, costs, and things, we couldn't possibly, you know, accommodate that. And, you know, we also want this for our employees. So if somebody comes and works for us for 6 months and quits, we're not going to want to continue to subsidize them with housing. But all those logistics are going to have to get worked out. We're going to have to figure that out together. We're going to have to get our bargaining unit's input and how we craft that. And
did you find out something that made you less worried?
Yes, there's language in there about state funded or funded projects. So I think we're exempt, but I didn't want to spend the money to have legal counsel evaluate it unless you're sure we want to move forward. So that's, I'm waiting to hear what way you want us to move.
So only a couple other items on this kind of next steps list for us. It's kind of like this superintendent just saying, getting validation for you about moving forward with next steps. I spoke to some of them already. But some of these, we talked about the additional survey, getting further clarification, partnering with our union partners to get some more detail about that. Seeing what the impact of the ballot measures are from a monetary perspective, we can model it and see what that, that'll take some time to clarify that. But other components such as doing an RFP for the architectural services, for us to come back to you after we've had some discussions regarding the construction options, whether we do a design build or a lease back model, we'll have that discussion with you as well in terms of how we proceed. And then moving forward, doing an RFP for a particular contractor partner. We have to do a partner for a manager, property management process. You know, kind of finalizing the design of it, entitlement process, there's lots more steps to take. So, again, tonight was just giving you kind of a high-level overview. This looks like a thumbs up in terms of how it'll look financially for us. We've talked about things, you know, as superintendent was talking about, if someone is employed and after 6 months they're out here, what do we do looking at vacancy rates relative to the debt that's outstanding we have to cover? We've talked about things about how we cover the debt during that first year, 18 months of construction. You know, there are options like that in a lot more detail, which we'll bring back to you in the next couple months. So really excited that the exciting thing is what we heard too from the city too, that it looks like, you know, this cost will come down even further. And that's another, just really quickly, but the discussion we've had relative to the cost, if there's more money that comes into us from those measures, the rents that we talk about in this model, can we drive those down even further? Because if our goal is to recruit, retain people, but also give people the opportunity to own the community, which builds that community, then if we can drive those costs down even further, and those folks can save that money, that's a benefit too. So we might be able to drive that cost down even below the cost that we model out here, depending on how much money we get from that. And that's what we're going to be talking to. So a lot of those detailed conversations that we have, we'll bring back to you for your consideration.
There are some projects that allow that, like we could potentially, if we could drive down the cost, we could collect $300 in that went, that, you know, was paid in rent each month, could then go into a savings account that when the person exited left their term of lease, they would have a nest egg to work with to ideally get into the housing market.
You can also pay off the project early, which is great because then you don't have to carry the additional interest or debt. Mm-hmm. So there's another option.
Yeah, we have a lot of modeling to do for you, Sherry, what it looks like cash flow wise.
Yes, all very exciting. And the DCG, is that for Dutrasera? Is that was Dutrasera Gardens okay now at all?
Our CEO just bought out his partner.
So it's DG or something else?
It's still DCG.
Okay. very exciting and very happy. I know that this is all relatively new due to the Thurman bill in San Francisco a couple of years ago. One of the pieces, and I don't want to be a downer, is just to have on the horizons any lawsuits or hiccups that have come the direction of those who have moved first, so that we can have those for consideration and how we'd like to move forward to ensure our project doesn't have those pieces. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Dan, pass the question.
I just wanted clarification. So you're just asking for an opt tonight, but you do, if we're saying generally yes, because it's not an action item.
It's not an action
item. You will pursue. Because I'm curious, and I don't know the information well enough, this is a new project, but Costa Hawkins, is that an will affect this well, or no? Because it's newer construction.
Yeah, so it has slight impact, but not okay. Enough to be able to sink the project.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the good news.
So do you have what you need?
We don't need an actual vote.
No, it's not an action item.
But I would like to see thumbs up that you want us to keep pursuing this and want us to expend some legal counsel money and things to move forward in.
Okay. Absolutely.
All right.
Questions for the public?
A question or a comment? Casey Carlson. Casey Carlson, representing the Greater Santa Cruz Federation of Teachers. And I just wanted to go on the record tonight as saying that our union, which we have some of our leaders in the audience tonight, is absolutely unequivocally supportive of workforce housing.
Right.
I was contacted by a community member who contacted me as the teachers union president, wanting me to come in and advocate against classified employees living in the housing project. And I was surprised. And so I tried to respond at first in an educational way, and that NII asked her to celebrate in this process of engagement, and she's going to decline to do that. But I just want to go on the record saying that our teachers absolutely want this to be housing for all employees in Santa Cruz City Schools.
Thank you. And thank you for the report. It was,
thanks, everybody. Thank
you very much.
Very
exciting.
Thank you.
Is this
the
next?
Yeah, you're next for the item 8.5.2.2, opening enrollment.
Talk about the steps we took to gather information, which we do on an annual basis, and then take a look at the actual numbers relative to the projections that we have for you for the current year. Okay. So just as a quick recap for everybody, we've used a firm for the past 3 years called Decision Insight. The district contracted this company. In the past 2 years, their projections were within 1% of the actual numbers we saw. We've seen that again this year. And we'll show the actual data in terms of how that pencils out for us. During the first 10 days of school, we actually go through and do an actual live body count at the schools, and also take into consideration SDC, we take into consideration kids that have absences, we take into consideration in the secondary students that are at no period for that day, but they're not marked absent. And then we know we had some anticipated increases and decreases. Our overall net forecast was a decline of about 70 students from last year to this year. Okay, for the whole district, about 70 students overall. And first we're going to show you kind of a projected versus actual enrollment for all the schools, and we're talking about where you got elementary versus secondary, and talking about the funding for those. Okay? So you'll see here just school on the left-hand side, walking through all these, and then the projections versus actual, and then this shows you the variance over here on the right hand side. So multiple schools with decreases in enrollment. Our elementary, we're seeing decline in enrollment overall. Bayview down about 19, DLVA down 35, Gulf down 26, Westlake down 21, Monarch was relatively flat, up 1, AFE was down 21 for projections, VARC down 9, Coscello down 6, B40 was flat, B40 was 6, an increase of 6, I'm sorry, an increase of 6.
6. Mission Hill and Ecruz of 8. Harvard down 61. Santa Cruz High up 110. And Soquel up 41 relative to the projection. So a net overall decrease in the district down here, a net decrease from projected to actual of 32 students. Okay? And then we just break these out for you both at the elementary level and then at the secondary level. Elementary, we're a basic aid district. The elementary district is a basic aid district. So, fortunately, this decline between our projected and actual doesn't affect us negatively in terms of funding because we're a basic aid district. We don't lose funding because of that. And then the next slide, which shows on the secondary, we show a net increase here of 83. And in a few minutes, we're going to talk about multi-year, we're going to talk about projections and things like that. So this is a positive change for us relative to our projections. So this will result in us modifying our projected revenue for the secondary district as a first interim. We'll multiply that number out. We'll see how that trend continues through CBEDs and see if there's any variations to that number. Again, this is looking as of August 31st at all the school sites. Okay, so this is relative to the projections, a net decrease of 32 relative to our projections. So again, the projections, decision insights, overall projections look to be in the 99-plus percentile range, but a decline in enrollment. We're seeing continued decline in enrollment in the elementary district. And then secondary district, we're seeing an increase. Longer term, what we have to do together as a team, as a community, is look at the decline in enrollment in elementary. How do we trend that out, and what's that impact to us, and when does it impact us financially at the secondary? Right? You heard the conversation earlier with inter-district transfers, things like that. So that's a conversation we have in our work session coming up too, and reevaluating that as a process and a parameter for the district. So overall, a net positive gain for the district for us in terms of enrollment, but longer term, we have to monitor what's happening with the decline in enrollment in the elementary level. Okay? So that's just kind of big picture data we're looking at.
Can you share me?
Yeah.
So, just looking at it this year only, not making any comment, good or bad or anything, just looking at it from a financial point of view, if we're 115 people down in students down at the elementary, but we're a basic aid district, we might have perhaps 4.0 FTE times 80K each, that's $320,000, and yet we're still getting the same amount of money.
That's correct.
So where are we going to pencil? Are you going to show that to us in the that plus $320,000?
What I'm going to show you, Jeremy, is the plus $1,000 relative to the increase of 83. I'm not going to show you because we have contracts with folks, we have staffed.
Right.
Although we're down in enrollment, it's interesting how it shakes out by school site, but this year we already, based on the anticipated plan, we have 5 fewer FTE this year than last year.
Okay.
At least, so when we did the initial budget, we budgeted 5 FTE less, and I believe we came in at 6. So elementary, we're watching really closely. And
so what you're saying is you've already projected that.
Yes.
We projected, to some extent, because you had to say you're at 6 months instead of 5.
Okay. Right. Okay.
So, but
and that's where the within 1% comes in. That helped you.
When we look at the multi-year again, Jeremy, as we walk through the year this year, when we reevaluate next year, if we're down actual this year, so now our base for elementary goes down by 100, so in that multi-year, you're suggesting, might we need fewer FTEs still. And that's something that as we walk down the path of this year, we'll get to staffing for next year, we'll look at that. And see how this, do we see any kids actually come into the district and change that number. But when Decision Insight uses the data from this year, they'll look at that decrease 115. So FTE-wise, we look at the enrollment for next year, that's when we'll factor it in.
Allow me one follow-up, Chad. I'm not only saying that we have 5.0 or 4.0 or 6.0 fewer FTE, but that translates to a positive. And again, I'm not commenting on the loss of teachers. That's not a good thing. But that actually translates to a financial positive in our bottom line.
Once that unfortunate thing for some young people or veteran people, if their services are no, if they're no longer contracted with the district, that's the positive financial impact you're talking about. Yes,
yes.
I agree.
And it was built into our multi-$1,000. Not just for 1 year, but ongoing.
Already. No, that's for the
ongoing.
But there'll be further. We'll walk on it. Does someone else have a question?
Sheila.
Well, this is just a curiosity question. You know, we've been talking about how Soquel High is continuing to grow, and the other high schools are not. And then Santa Cruz High comes out 110 up. Do we have any idea why?
You saw that. Chris, go ahead. Well,
we're trying to get that data from our system. And one of the things that we all met about in preparing these presentations, illuminates different, and people aren't necessarily, we need to train our registrars on how to input the where kids came from into the system, and so we had that conversation. We're going to plan a training to make sure that we're doing it uniformly. I know from waitlists, because as we were getting, as I had Santa Cruz High calling me and saying we need to add FTE, I said, please send me the list of kids who are coming and where they're coming from, because they had that just in their counseling office. Mm-hmm. Some of it was privates, some of it was charters, some of it was IDTs, some of it was from out of area moving into the community for the first time.
So no one thing.
It wasn't, but on those lists, and that's anecdotal. So those are the lists that they provided me as they were asking us to increase their FTE, because I wanted to have evidence of who's coming and where they're coming from. So we're working on getting that data, though. So we're
across all the schools, so it won't just be Santa Cruz High, so we'll know also who's going to Soquel and who's...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Question?
Go ahead, Cindy, and then Patty.
Patty is first. Go ahead.
It's just along with the IDTs and the elementary school. Do we have a way of abstracting the privates and their capacities and what goes on? So we'll have Gateway, and we have Spring Hill, and we have Holy Cross. Just thinking in a broader band of how many students are in the county that would be eligible for Santa Cruz City Schools, and maybe start taking into consideration where Jeremy was pointing to, knowing that we need the actual FTE in one direction, where we might want to be thinking about attracting and growing, if we can, to something to consider. And if it's not too much work, what's really out there? I mean, you know, if we, in an ideal world, wanted everyone to come to Santa Cruz City School, public schools, what does our county actually hold in student numbers?
That's a good question.
Regarding the projections versus the actuals, does Decision Insight work with the district at this point when there's a part of their projection that was significantly off? For instance, the Harbor incoming Harbor number is significantly 61 students. That's, that's significant fifths.
Yeah, they would seek that same information that you're seeking from us to help inform them. Cindy,
do you work in partnership with them?
We'll work with them, but they're to a great extent. Cindy, what they look at is kind of the raw data. They'll look at housing.
Right.
They'll look at, you know, are you going to see an increase relative to housing? Has there been an out-migration due to some economic issue?
Cohort survival and all that. But something was missed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So part of your investigation will be
what
was missed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not that it was a mistake per se, but it was
right.
Missed.
Well, I think that oh, sorry, that's me. I think that depth of information, sorry, Chris, that's a reminder to... I think that was a reminder for me to send someone an email last night.
Yeah.
But that level of detail that we're talking about with you, we can share that information with them to help inform, but they're essentially forecasting.
Okay.
And some of these, as families move out, when you look at that from a trend perspective, they look at trends as opposed to individuals.
Right, so we're really on our own in digging into
a lot of
that 61 out of Harbor and that 110 into Santa Cruz. And then just a follow-up, and I'm not really looking for an answer here, but just to think out loud. So if Santa Cruz High calls and they need more FTE, that's an obvious reaction there. But if a school is way under the projection, then that's a much more difficult challenge, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do when we're under the projected FTE?
Yeah, and especially because our schools aren't on the same schedule,
yeah.
So I can't say Santa Cruz High needs a 0.4 in math, but we can't really share a teacher between Harbor and Santa Cruz High because the schedules don't
sure,
match.
Sure, I understand all that, yeah.
So that's where
it... And it's even tough between Harbor and Soquel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just to get a 0.4, you got travel time in there, it's...
Travel. Yeah, I understand all that, yeah. But 61 off is a big number.
It is,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy,
another question?
Yeah, I'm thinking out loud, and I want to know if I'm on the right track, but the multi-year projection gets kind of complicated because that plus the elementary becomes a negative at the secondary, so you've got to factor that in too, huh?
Well, that's what we'll do with Decision Insight, but for us as an organization, we look at this declining trend in elementary, down 100 more than we thought we down. So statistically, it's not insignificant. 100 relative to a 2,000-plus population is statistically a pretty good size percentage.
And what I'm saying, I guess, is that also will eventually impact secondary because the
right.
smaller class sizes will move on through. So.
That's right. So some of us look at longer term, as we've taught the decline in
the
we've
yeah.
factored that in, we look at the decline we anticipate for the district. And they produced two different scenarios for us, a conservative estimate
right.
and a moderate.
Right.
Or the conservative, I should have clarified, this is the relative to their conservative estimate. We use their conservative estimate for staffing purposes. And again, this is relative to their conservative estimate again.
Okay. No other questions? Thank you.
Switch gears here.
And now we're moving on.
Oh, sorry, Casey.
Oh, I'm sorry. I tried to get it to you.
Sorry. I had a question about the legal circumstances. Casey speaking from the Federation. I was just wondering when they look again regarding theater districts, whether that's similar, because Soquel, the elementaries we're looking at here, aren't feeding into Soquel, and part of Harbor is also not being fed by those schools. So it would be good to know what the Soquel and Libo elementaries
were
like for predicting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you got an email from Soquel today, Chris, asking something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at, they were asking us if we use a demographer, who to be used,
mm-hmm.
because they're seeing that decline as well, too, so they're trying to do a long-term forecast
mm-hmm.
as well. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Chris, along those same lines, mm-hmm. just with the districts that are within us, like the Bonnie Doon and Happy Valley, are they also shrinking at elementary?
Bonnie Doon is growing. They fell out of basic aid because they've grown so much. But their numbers are pretty small.
Mm-hmm. What is growing to a 150
exactly.
student
yeah.
district,
exactly.
right?
So going from less than 100, you know, just over 100 to 150 is a really significant increase for
yeah.
them in terms of proportion and percent. But it's not going to have a huge impact on us.
Mm-hmm. Right. Happy Valley and Pacific?
I think Mountain has grown a little bit, and getting ready to push them out of basic aid, too.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Valley is still in basic aid, and I don't think they've seen significant change.
Mm-hmm.
But I can find out for sure more.
And with the Happy Valley follow-up, is their trajectory, are they heading to Scott Valley or are they heading to us because they are in kind of the...
They always split.
Split.
Mm-hmm.
They always
split.
Split.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we're ready to jump into this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, so we,
yeah.
we provide everyone, there's information on the table there for the public to see. We shared information with you. We have unaudited actions for each answer for you. And what I want to focus on tonight is some of the variance we saw between the estimated actuals and the unaudited actuals. In particular, what I want to focus on is on the unrestricted side, because we have language on that. I'll get that a little bit for everyone's sake, so that if you know. So, big picture, we didn't hit the number we stopped at. And we have work to do as a team to improve that process. We've had some discussion about processes. Some of those things we've already enacted, but we have room to improve so we get closer to this number. from a dollars and cents perspective, this is not a negative issue for us as a district, but our estimates were off, and we had to have discussions with each other more frequently so that we refine that number. I use an analogy I've talked to my team about for years. When you're in August and you're throwing a dart at the dartboard, you're way back in, you're throwing it. When we get to May, which is the estimated actions comes to you, you're like this close to the board. We get really close to hitting that number. And so we saw a variance, and we have to improve on what we're doing as a team so that you and we and us together as a team have information that helps us make decisions about the health of the district and where we're going in the district. Okay, so I'm going to walk through some of these components. Oh, you know what? It's not different to this. Sorry, you have a good manual.
Here, you know what? I can put it.
Can you?
Yep.
Is it just this thing?
It's this right here. This
one. Oh, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I hope it has a port. Yes. Perfect. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe.
Maybe.
Not. Okay, we'll go old school.
Here, I'll do it.
Well, this one only has one small. There it is. Okay, thanks. Okay, big picture. We're looking at the ending balances here and focus on unrestricted, which I said we wanted to focus on. So, in our estimated actions column here, we have an unrestricted estimated actual of $8.1 million. Our unactual was $11 million, and this shows a difference here of $2.9 million. So, we went from a 9.43% estimated actuals to a 13.6% estimated actuals for a variance of 4.17%. And just so folks may not know, but we, when I first came on board, I wanted to put language into, and we have this tremendous relationship with our bargaining partners. We want to put language in our contract because every district in the state of California, I shouldn't say never, I'd say, I'd venture to guess 90%+ of districts in the state of California, there is a variance between your estimated actuals and your unaudited actuals. And when I first came on board, there were things that affected this district's budget, which were kind of outside of the control of the district. And so we worked together because we want to make sure there's always this clarity regarding the numbers that are available to us, and we put language into our contract that speaks to you. If we have a variance greater than 2% in this unrestricted estimated actual to unactual, that it trips this discussion we have together about we should revisit that, we should understand it, and we have how conversation goes out what we're going to do with those dollars. Okay? And so we're in that zone again. And so tonight's presentation is to give some more clarity around what those numbers in our ending balance are, what they are, and what were some of the things that we're managing to look at those numbers and make that make sense. Okay. So we're going to walk through these numbers you see here. There's an Excel spreadsheet that's out there too, folks, that these numbers that are in these slides match what's in your Excel spreadsheet. And then that last column in that Excel spreadsheet, there was these numbers we captured for you, which was the variance between the estimated actuals and your unrestricted. So I'm going to walk through revenues, then I'm going to walk through expenditures, and then we'll walk through contributions, and then we're going to give Amy a round of applause for her food services efforts this year for doing this incredible job, okay? So on the revenue side, we look at these variances here on the unrestricted side. And on the LCFF calculus, it's comprised of all these different components, but we had some increase in property taxes, we had some decreases in our secured, some increase in our unsecured. Net effect of this, we had an increase in our LCFF calculation. Jeremy.
Very quick. We're looking at local property taxes there.
That's
and
our
projection was $368,000 and too little.
No, on the first one here, Jeremy, the net number here, when I took the local number is something different. This is local funds, that's not property tax.
Oh, sure.
Right. So I'm gonna talk about that too. But I referenced county here because the county gives us information. And we, like other districts, get this information in July. I think we get the final number that impacts our final number. So between our estimated actual and our unaudited, we get property tax final information, which we weave into the unaudited actual. Okay? The other things here on the local revenues, one of the things here, I talked to Casey about, this is, well, I talked to Casey about this because as a district, we had not booked the revenue that we receive as reimbursement for Casey's release time. And the practice in the district has been that the district doesn't book revenue until the revenue is received. And so we're going to change that practice, and we're going to weave into our multi-year, which we produce for you, we're going to weave in that year in, year out, we're going to see this revenue coming in from GSCFT to the district. And some of this is me still learning stuff too, but some of the practices have been that this revenue, about $100,000 of this 368 year, which is local revenue, was associated with that. So in our new multi-year we do, we're going to build into the multi-year that number we get for reimbursement. Okay? So that was...
I don't understand. What revenue is this that we didn't book?
So GSCFT, we get reimbursed for Casey's release time as the union president.
Oh, for Casey.
You always have.
We always have. But how it's booked, it wasn't booked until we get to the on-out action. So this is
$100,000 ongoing.
That's right.
That we miss.
Okay. That's for the speak. Okay. So in some of our discussion together, the team's going to be, how do we differentiate ongoing versus one-time money? That's part of our discussion together that says, relative to that contingency language you built in, so we have this ongoing conversation, we talk about this term multiple times, about keeping the door open, that this is part of that discussion. And specifically, the language talked about, we want to differentiate ongoing versus one-time money. So this would be an ongoing source of money that we're going to weave into our multi-year together.
But that's only $100,000 of the 368.
The other, there's another portion here, Jeremy, which has to do with the Career Technical Education Incentive Grant. And Chris can speak to this better than me.
Can I just ask a question about that? So it is usually standard practice never to book the monies until they occur. Casey, so it's a pass-through? Would it be considered a pass-through on how anybody's paid from a third entity? Being that GF's, you know, we're not getting it from the state, we're getting it through the teachers union who's paying for that union leadership. Though the union leadership is considered a teacher within our district, is that why we have to go in that direction?
So,
and my only reason for asking is because I'm wondering if there would be, we don't want to get in the practice of knowing that money's coming so that we're saying we're going to book it and then book it and it not come.
Well, in my 20 years, Patty, and I've 20 years, I've never seen the money not show up from the association.
I'm not saying that about the association. I'm just saying about the practice of doing that.
The practice in general.
Well, some of these, it may be unique to the particular thing. We thought there was some risk, Patty. If we thought there was some problem that may not occur, then we would have a discussion that says, let's not worry about it. For this particular instance, as an ongoing revenue source, I think this is a fairly stable revenue source we can anticipate. We're going to incur the expenditure, but I think they're good for it.
So we'll line item that one out separately.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Just a second. Krista talked about the CTEIG.
So there's two. We have our own CTE grant as a district, and that is a reconciled CTE grant in our restricted funds. The county, there's a collaborative CTE grant that offsets what we owe the county for the RLP charges that we have in our MOU. But part of what has been difficult for us to get is to get a reconciliation of what we, all year long we asked the county, what are we going to owe you this year? What are we going to owe you this year? We didn't know what proportion of the collaborative CTA grant we would get. And they were working to determine which of our pathways qualified, those kind of things, but we didn't get that information until really late. So that was one of the things that impacted our things. And part of that, you know, the COE, just like us, have been understaffed in their finance departments. And so we just, although we were asked repeatedly throughout the year, because I wanted to know how much of our Measure O is going to go to the CTE, we budget we know 1.4 million was what we were told to budget, but it didn't come in as that much because we got the portion of the CTIC grant that we got from the county offset it. So we didn't end up having to spend as much of our Measure O dollars.
And when we talk about expenditures, just to piggyback really quick on what Chris is talking about, when we look at the special ed part of this equation too on the expenditure side, the information we get from the county, they were short-staffed all year long in terms of reconciling with special ed. So when we look at, there is an increased revenue for special ed for us and a decrease in expenditures for special ed for us, but that information we receive from the county. So it's a timing thing, right? And that's why I think it's really good we had this instrument that says, because of those variables, we don't close the door on the year. We say if there's more money after all the stuff we get from the county to reconcile it, we have that discussion about it. Okay? So that's kind of the big picture of those items in the revenue side.
Can I ask one more question of Chris about that? Is that a problem that we are not spending our Measure O money?
No, it's not. And there's going to be a certain amount of Measure O that we want to keep this year because we're going to have capital expenditures for CTE that we need to make, equipment replacement that's costly. So we're going to want to make sure that we have a certain amount of savings account in Measure O so that when we need to replace a computer lab, when we need to replace a lift in the auto shop, that we have those dollars available from Measure O to do that, and that's part of what we budgeted when we made our budget for the parcel tax. So there will be some carryover from year to year in Measure O with the idea that we know we're going to have to do capital expenditures.
And perhaps we have to be ready to explain that to the community if they start to...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it was in it, absolutely.
The other thing I'll just share, we're sharing with the principals and our partners is... if there's going to be a carryover that we anticipate, we don't want it to be a passive decision. Right? Have it be an active decision that we anticipate it, as opposed to it just shows up on a slide.
Absolutely.
And that you know, I'm glad we had that contingency language there so we can have a discussion about it. But we want it to be an active. Yeah. So we're and we'll get to the next steps in a little bit. So really quickly in here, rather than talking on and on. Salaries and benefits, and then books and supplies. On the salaries and benefits side, when we look at this, statistically it's a fairly low percentage in terms of the variance. On the certificate side, there's this is the unrestricted component, the $65,000. There's a $40,000 adjustment on the restricted side. There's a net like $20,000 overall number on the certificate side for salaries, so we're really close on that. On the classified side, though, we have things like extra work agreements, and time cards, a lot of those come in the springtime. So we're clearing through all those items, we're reconciling all those items, we open up these extra work agreements, and I'm learning too that a lot of the school site secretaries do that as opposed to being done here. So we have to have some discussion about unfolding that a little more so we can further refine this number. Again, statistically, it's a low number statistically, but when we look at the aggregate here, it's a portion of that overall aggregate. So we're looking at that process, and see what we can do to improve that process on extra work. So as we get closer to that dartboard in May, we're closer to that number, okay?
So Pat,
yeah.
And I'm just looking at this classified, so we have a negative in an expenditure, meaning that we had budgeted $161,000 that were not used.
That's correct.
In classified.
That's correct.
So that is something, as we work towards that's important to me because we have, after the 08 draconian cut, 6-8 through there, we've had schools and sites running on such limited classified personnel that this could have been spent in this last year to follow the last group of students and been committed to. And that's where the real time for me when I see these numbers play
point.
Out. I just wanted to say it out loud for the record.
That's why that process piece was, because you talk a lot about Pat's process, is looking at that EWA process to understand who's part of that, what was anticipated, and why was that variance? Why did it not occur? And why did we have that budget that we didn't adjust?
Well, why don't we have it as an actual position?
Yeah. Two things. One is Greg Torre reminded me about the system we have. I'm happy to report to you that now we're involved in this process to replace the system that we've been using. It's a great concern. It has been since I came on board, but it's going to be replaced. And so we'll have much better clarity and control on the things which we replace that system. Okay? So really quickly, books and supplies and stuff. What we captured for you here was when we looked at these dollar amounts, of these overall dollar amounts here in books and supplies and services, there are a portion of this that are related to LCFS, supplemental, and parcel. So these, if I add these two, that's 546 out of the eight, close to 880. So 646 of these book supplies and services are items that are funded out of the parcel and out of LCF supplemental that did not occur. So from a source of funds that's available for us to discuss as a team, these dollars, although technically the parcel tax, there's parameters around it, what you can and can't spend it on, and the LCFF supplemental is what you can and can't spend it on. The accounting code shows it as unrestricted. But But for us, discussion-wise, these dollars are really considered restricted as a portion of this overall number.
Meaning not for salaries, but
that's
for...
Right.
So this could have been when the music programs were looking to maybe not be at, say, Soquel High, that came forward saying, we'd like to have a full program where there's a building staff, or at Harbor High, where we don't just have one program. We would have been able to think about these dollars when we were making that decision last year if we had them.
I think the important thing, Patty, to answer that question is, when we look at all these, this is really an allocation we make. And so if we're going to revisit the allocations of what's been made, why weren't those dollars spent? So in our discussion with principals, we're going through every single principal.
Okay.
What's your managerial allocation, and why was it not spent? And is that allocation still something that makes sense?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. It does.
Sheila.
So, I'm still not quite understanding
sure.
it, because I had a very similar question to Patty's, that we make decisions along the way, or we say that we can't afford to make decisions along the way, and that's a good example, the Soquel one, or certain things that have happened with music programs around here. So now, at this point, are we looking at what were those decisions that, because of finances, we didn't make? And should they be spent according to where the differences are? But then you said this, so now I'm having a hard time understanding what you said about the allocations and going back to the schools, because my sense is, but maybe my sense is not right, that we, in the process here, the board and the administration, we're doing a lot of, well, we have to make choices, and these things need to be funded, kinds of things where certain things don't get funded, but then when the money shows up, it makes you question it.
Well, I think the big picture, Sheila, again, goes back to the allocations we made, and we have that exercise, and we go through the allocations associated with the parcel, and we talk about those allocations and the rationale for those allocations. An example, we talk about an after-school program,
mm-hmm.
right? And the fund that was set aside for the after-school program, and how much was actually spent on that after-school program relative to the allocation. So there's not only too much detail, but there's the one piece which says we look at that relative to what was allocated versus what was spent. And we have that conversation, which is twofold. Number one is, if the budget this year, we've allocated the same amount of money to you out of the parcel, that are you going to spend that? Or do we need to adjust that allocation because is it really a need that you have? Do we need to revisit the allocation? Then there's the other part of the discussion which we're having people too, which is we have carryover from these dollars from this year. And we're going to have a conversation about the carryover amounts
mm-hmm.
and how do those get reallocated. But I have the other answer to your question is I haven't kept a tab, Sheila, of and I don't mean to be facetious, but I haven't kept a tab on things that we requested to fund that we haven't funded. Because a lot of you have a lot greater, you know, knowledge base than I do about in terms of the history of us to get to those points.
We wouldn't have anyway. I mean, it's this coming up kind of highlights some of that.
Yeah.
And so it makes me, like when you talk about the allocations and why didn't you use it, that's a very good question.
Yeah.
But then what might you have wanted to use it for had you known? What is another question, you know?
Okay, we have Jeremy and Patty and Didi.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Can I just add one thing to that conversation? Part of what also has been really hard for school sites, it's really, really hard to see what's encumbered and what money you have with digital schools.
Mm.
And one of the process changes we're going to make is that Pat and Dorothy and people from her team are going to come out and talk about what's in your federal categoricals, walk principals and their secretaries through what they have, because that's part of what we are discovering is one of the obstacles to using those resources well each year.
And I have to say that that's a complaint I've heard for years now, that people don't feel that they know.
The system is bad. It's being replaced in July. And this year we're going to hold our budget managers through their hands each month through regular meetings.
So,
and
just not to moan and groan, but Suzanne, who a lot of you know, who's really brilliant. She does all these iterations for folks manually because the system is so cumbersome. It's not intuitive.
Oh, yikes.
It's really difficult. The new Lotus. Honestly, Chris will tell you, my first month in the district, I told the county, you need to replace that system. It's really poor. So, and that's good. It's being changed. So long term, but in the interim, till next year when that's in place, we've already scheduled multiple meetings with the principals this year to talk about not only financial stuff, but I've scheduled meetings with the principals to talk about facilities issues, technology issues. So we're going to be much more present this year for folks to help with that exact issue. So Patty and Dee Dee and Jeremy. I'm not sure who's first.
It was Jeremy, then Patty, then Dee Dee.
I don't think this is a time to discuss each and everything in detail. The point is that we would like to capture the obvious stuff, $100,000 Casey's salary, got it, and be shown what I would like, capture the obvious stuff and just be shown a very brief 30-second for each item pathway to your plan to analyze the stuff that might be a little bit vague. Otherwise, we're going to be here until midnight.
Exactly.
So you know, 5.7 million off from 9. That's over 2/3 off. You're over 66% off. And so, okay, we'd like to get that number down. There's some obvious things and some more difficult things. I'm assuming we're going to get a full report at some point from you about the plan to.
We'll talk about it. It's two slides ahead, Jeremy, but I can talk about some of that.
So that's really what I'm after, personally. Okay. Yep. And I think that's what the public might want.
I appreciate that, Jeremy, but I do want to take the opportunity to this to speak to, because going back towards Sheila's point, when we're making those decisions in the spring, and since the public is fully now saturated with the local control funding formula, a lot of times the public is coming to me and just having a disconnect to why something in a program or on the site, which just seems so reasonable from a parent or a student's point of view, does not filter out from here. And these are the types of dollars and, I guess, slowdown that I would call it, that doesn't follow the needs that are current at the time. So to have, and the better when you can show me how we can get past this and a review, because a lot of times it is very easy to say that we need to make sure the phone booth gets cleaned every year, so we have a $100,000 pot over there that we allocated and we didn't use. It no longer is what the students of current have. Thanks.
So I have a question about thinking forward. You mentioned that you would like to do a site-based allocations analysis, so have each site kind of look at the monies they've allocated and if they haven't used them, figure out what's going on there. Is there a need? So my question is, and this is strictly around parcel because I know LCFS is designated for certain populations of students. So around the parcels, if one site in their analysis realizes that they really don't have the need that they allocated for, and another site says, we really have a great need for a same or similar allocation item, is there the opportunity for the sites to kind of talk to each other and say, you've got a need here that we don't have here, could we redistribute those funds? Is that a possibility? Is the question.
I would suggest, Dee Dee, that when we revisit the carryover, that carryover would afford folks to establish what their priority is relative to those funds. Does that make sense? Because I'm thinking, if we have carryover and we let folks have some flexibility, it says we have a greater need for this, we have a greater need for that, that there's some flexibility in the carryover that we reallocate folks, which we did last year. We reallocated some funds to folks last year. We had carryover last year, too. And we reallocated. We had some discussion with folks. And this year, we have a little more carryover. So when we reallocate, I think that that's when that opportunity exists for folks to say, can I have flexibility to do X, Y, or Z?
And that's where we, if we, in the scope of what the parcel tax can be spent on.
Right.
Yes, so, like I know the music programs are asking
so
for
I'm just talking about across school.
Across sites. So if Pell has a great need for something that's parcel tax related, and Santa Cruz had money allocated for that but didn't find that they needed or expended those funds,
then what?
Could Santa Cruz say, you know, we don't have the need, and Soquel has the need. Could we shift those allocations across sites?
Let me share with you what some of the discussions are. So some of the discussions have been relative to carryovers. Is I've heard that some folks, and Jean's here, some folks did spend some of that allocation kind of under the, we're waiting for a rainy day time. And so the discussion, and then there's other sites that have spent those dollars and don't have carryover. So that's a part of an answer to your question. But I think that if there's a more strategic conversation that says that you or we as a district want to revisit allocations relative to need, relative to the carryover, that's a separate conversation. But the conversations are, like I said, the examples are, there's some folks who deliberately didn't spend all the money, and some folks spent all the money.
There is still a carryover for those of us who were administrators during the years when we did the massive cuts and didn't have dollars to work with, that are more conservative when you have money that you know you're going to need money for program and you that are savers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to talk about that too with the leadership team.
So let me jump to the next slide. We'll jump to the next steps because I'm not sure what time it is. So, again, this is the variances we're going to transfers out and transfers in contributions. Okay? So I mentioned earlier, Amy did an exceptional job. So we had shared with you that we believe that the contribution to our capture fund will be decreased. But it ended up this year, I think our contribution to the capture fund was down in $100,000 when Greg came, right? So this is an adjustment to the anticipated contribution relative to the actual contribution. And we're going to talk about, meet more frequently to look at budgets. Craig and Amy are going to meet more frequently to talk about budgets as we get to that debt report and throw that dart close to the end of the year. But there's some things like Amy did a great job with the anticipated, better than expected funds relative to catering. The next bullet that I captured here, this contribution number, I talked to you earlier too, these adjustments here, the 246 of special ed revenue increase and a $260,000 expenditure decrease. This is really the county shared that information with us. Sorry,
SELPA cost.
What?
SELPA cost. So timing of when the special ed local plan.
Yeah, no, I know what that is. I'm just trying to figure out what the money is. What is it passing through the county that we didn't know about?
Our revenue ended up being higher. Our 8602 revenue ended up being higher. I'm not sure where the calculation changed from what was projected, what they had projected for us, because they do a projection at P1 and P2. And then the special ed expenditure decrease, it's reconciliation of who was in programs.
So that wasn't us really doing that. I mean, it's
from the county.
But they're looking at our, like, if we decrease a program,
These are county-run programs.
Okay.
So it may mean that two of our kids weren't in Chrysalis for the full year, and so the cost was less to us.
Right.
So let me jump to kind of this next set of slides, which if we talk about that first issue, right, the reconciliation with county, but this is kind of continuing work with the county on the timing of notifications. Right? Property taxes, special ed costs, throw that dart closer to the estimated.
Mm-hmm.
Second bullet is adjusting practices, booking revenue associated with reimbursements. This is what we were talking about for Casey and other things. There's other opportunities to do that in terms of when we book revenue. We have multiple meetings. I have multiple meetings set up this year with the principals, meet with them after sites. We're meeting with all of them this week, but we have multiple dates set throughout the year this year, not only talking about financial stuff, but talking about maintenance operations, bond, technology as well, too. Meetings being coordinated with, and I think superintendent talked about this earlier today too. There's meetings being coordinated with curriculum and instruction directors with the sites to talk about the restricted dollars. So we choreograph this information. We're meeting with principals along with these folks. We're going to meet more regularly with Amy, Greg, Curtis, Trevor, and I are going to meet more frequently so we can look at those budget supplies numbers and contracted services. Molly and I have talked about reestablishing when we get closer to year end, when we look at those extra work agreements, overtime, those types of things, we're going to reestablish a meeting when we get close to producing the estimated actual, so we look at that in greater detail. And then our continued goal is to have less than a 2% variance here. And that's really contingent on a lot of factors. But the internal things we can manage or we can control, we want to focus in on that. I can talk about other things we did that were positive, but that's kind of a quick recap for you. Okay? So.
Okay, go ahead, Patty.
Just one last piece. So when I'm looking at our multi-year projection,
you
have our 17-18 balances do not roll into 18-19 beginning balances because of the SAS report requiring adopted budget numbers to be preserved. So when I look at our bottom line, when we look in the percentage of our unrestricted reserve, of course, the 17-18 reflects a 13.7, but if we have this adopted, these out numbers would be completely different.
Here's the issue, Patty. The way that the system and the state's software works, it's permissive for you to adopt the unaudited actuals tonight because what that system does is it preserves the 18-19. You can't modify it. It preserves it. It rolls it forward intact. You can't modify it. What we need to do for you, we need to do for our partners as well, too, is produce for you a multi-year Excel spreadsheet which takes that information, as an example, takes that ending balance from this 17-18 and rolls it into 18-19. You need a working document to look at that. But the action you're going to take tonight is you're acting on the unaudited actuals.
Yes, and so I guess my question being is that when reading this particular report, we can note that our unrestricted reserves do not account for the dollars that we just spoke about on the bottom line. So the 12.42% will change upon that to reflect about $5
million. All that's going to cascade through all those multiple years. And we'll do adjustments like Casey Sally as an example. We're going to adjust all of our multiple years to reflect that in our revenue stream.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Mike, because thank you for that, because I wanted to mention that. Okay.
Sheila, then Jeremy, and then
okay, so I'll try to make this brief, Chris. I just want to say that I think that this the issue, what Dee Dee asked and what I was asking, the issue of people holding back money because they know they have something versus there being money out there is one that maybe we should talk about in terms of how much we ask people to define that and to make that public knowledge. Because I've had people say, but if there is money, and they're saying they're saving it for something, but we have this need, why are you saving it? It kind of reminds me of, in the Nation of Sheep, they had this whole thing about Korea, and they had warehouses full of stuff that had been given to the country, and the people were starving. And they said, why aren't you giving it to them? And they said, because you'll go away and we'll still need. That both sides are very truthful, but we really have to watch the balance because if there's a need in a school that does not have the ability to meet that need, then maybe it's not important to keep your money in plan. Maybe we have to have that conversation more open between people. So that's just, I wanted to say that.
Jeremy, did you not? You did.
So, given the fairly large discrepancies right now, I think it would be logical for me, and I hope my fellow school board members would agree, to ask you back to revisit this at some point in terms of an update. What have you put into practice? How's it going in terms of trying to get this number be tighter? What do you think a good time for that might be so that the board can consider that? Thank you.
So, time frame wise, Jeremy, I'd like to do the technical part for next closed session. I'd like to have a numeric representation for you to take a look at relative to the language in the contract for you to see what that ripple effect is of this carryover and the adjustments. So a working document for us to... Chris,
when are you done?
Oh, please. So that the time frame wise. But the other part, Jeremy, too, for some of these process questions, I need some more time.
No, no. And in fact, I was referring to the process questions. Okay. And I was referring, and so you've answered that. You need more time. What would be ballpark in terms of January, February to revisit this?
How about if I bring back the next board meeting kind of a plan that says time frame? Off the top of my head, I haven't wrapped my head around it.
I would like that. I'm not sure if the other fellow school board members would like that. Is that doable for you?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Okay.
Just a time frame.
Sure.
Okay.
Would it be okay if we presented that time frame to you via email as opposed to as an agenda
sure.
item?
That's my question. Thank you. I was wondering if it's the one that is a formal agenda. Thank you.
Cindy.
I think we're on the same page in terms of the next steps being as important as anything that we've seen in the detail here. Unfortunately, of course, the variance was in the positive direction. And low B, if the variance were in the other side,
yeah,
we'd all
yeah.
be in a lot of trouble. We wouldn't be as cheerful as we are tonight. But, so I think the next steps are super critical. And I also wanted to weigh in on the site carryover issue. And obviously, the sites would need the tools of a clear accounting system. So they know the money they have. They know the money they've spent. They know their balances. They know their encumbrances. So it sounds like you're moving in the right direction in that regard. I don't need an answer to this question, but I would just wonder out loud from a management side what processes or goals are in place in terms of carryover. I mean, from some sides, like when I was a site principal, we really couldn't carry over. We had to stay, keep a really tight ship. And if we were going to carry over, we had the document in writing to the superintendent why we were keeping that money, no worrying allowed. But you could plan. But it had to be thought out. But none of that works if you don't have the clear numbers. Second thing was with the big budget document, the J200, don't we have to list on that some of the pieces for the biggest pieces of a variance?
Yeah, and that field, that written field, is relatively brief.
I see. More of a footnote than the kind of report
that
we're looking for. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Comments or questions from the public?
Casey Carlson representing the Federation. And I'd like to start by saying thank you. Pat contacted me on Friday to let me know that this was coming up. And Mark McConnell, one of our negotiators and our treasurer, met with Pat and Greg and Molly on Monday and got a little more insight into that. And we're also looking forward to what the board was referring to and what Pat was referring to that Excel spreadsheet that would include the new numbers going out in the out years. And my understanding is this MYP also didn't have the governor's budget in it. So that new Excel spreadsheet would have the new numbers here that we're seeing tonight, the variance, and the governor's budget in the out years. And we're hoping, I think we're going to tentatively meet prior to October 1st when we're going into negotiations so that we have a better picture prior to negotiations. And I thought I would just take a moment to read, I don't know if the board has seen or remembers the actual language in our contract, so I was just going to read this piece. It said, the district proposes that the district and GSCFT convene negotiations on compensation after board review of the unaudited actuals being completed for the 2017-2018 school year to determine if there is a variance in the unrestricted reserve greater than 2% between the estimated actuals and unaudited actuals that could be committed to further increases to GSUFT. I know Classified also has that language. And so I just wanted to bring it back to the board to remind the board that there is a commitment made in this contract language. And I know that there is... Anytime that there's more money, there's a lot of you know, sometimes the community comes forward and there's many different quality programs that I want to remind the board about that commitment that was made. And then coincidentally, not knowing that this was coming, I had begun the bargaining survey for our regular bargaining for 18-19. And I tried to dig a little deeper in the bargaining survey, not just kind of do a checklist and ask people to try to get a sense of what their concerns and feelings were. And one of the questions I asked was if they ever seriously, in the last year, had they seriously explored or planned to leave the teaching profession. And we had 26% so far. I mean, the survey just began on Friday, so I've had 99 people respond so far. 26% said that they're seriously making plans to leave, and 38% said that they're thinking about leaving. And then my follow-up question was, what if you are thinking about leaving, what are the factors? And I had class size, need for more instructional support, challenges in addressing student behaviors and needs, stress, workload, benefit cost, and salary versus cost of living. And you can probably guess 68% of respondents marked that the primary reason they're thinking of getting out of teaching is salary versus the cost of living. And I started highlighting all the comments about salary, and it just goes on and on. Salary, a decent raise, salary and the cost of benefits, salary and benefits, better salary and benefits, salary and class size, salary, we need a 10% salary increase, cost of living, salary increase, pay increase without raising benefit costs, salary, pay increase, money. It's discouraging to have to work so hard to have to pay more for benefits every year. Class size and low pay, salary and teacher workload, salary, more money, please, need a raise, it's too hard to live here, compensation, cash, salary, cost of living, salary, and class size, and they go on and on. One person said something about salary, it's really hard for young teachers to get by here, and a group of teachers I see outside of school often talks about checking salary schedules over the hill or in other locations. So I just want to reiterate, without getting into the down and dirty of negotiations, that we need a salary.
Hi, I'm Jean Brown. I'm the president of Classified Junior, and I'd like to echo everything that Casey has said. I don't have a fancy survey to share with you, but our members are looking for increases. Some of our members are making $13, $14 an hour, and that's just not enough to live here in Santa Cruz. They work multiple jobs. A lot of positions aren't benefited. We're looking to raise the minimum. You know, the state says we have to raise it to, I think, $15.22 in 2022. Hopefully we can get there before the state mandate is to bring our employees up, because this is all I hear, is we need more money. And I really appreciate that Pat had put that language in our contract. I found out it was you who did it. I thought it was the teachers. I was on that. But then I found out it was you, so I give you credit for putting that language in there to take care of us, so if there was money left on the table, that you would be sharing that with us in our paychecks. So I just appreciate it, and Molly's not sitting there, but I did want to once again thank her for the way negotiations do go. There are conversations more than seem like fighting against each other, but we talk about plans and where we can go and what we can do. So anyway, like I told Casey, I was going to say, show me the money.
Yeah.
Show me the money. So thank you.
Anybody else? The recommendation is to approve. Student recommendation?
Not at this moment.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? Who's the next item?
8.3.6.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can I be brief? This is a long meeting. So I'm really not sure, because my memory failed me on this, how much we've talked about this, but it is a important issue. Maybe we don't want to talk about it tonight, but we should eventually have a conversation what we want in terms of campus security regarding cameras on campus, how many, and so on. We are being asked to approve $36,500 for, I'll read it, the proposed project will entail running new power and Cat 6 cable to locations of the new security cameras at Harvard High School, and here it is. This is the first phase of campus security upgrades. This contractor was selected, blah, blah, blah. So I think we should talk about that. It's been a long meeting. How many cameras are we talking about in terms of Harvard High School?
I would say six, Jim.
Can I have Pat explain kind of what the plan was with this pilot and
where the lights will be versus the on campus versus behind campus, maybe or something?
We could certainly, what I could do for you too, just in the interest, I can send you a rendering of where the cameras are going to be located. And I know there's discussion with Chris and the school side as well too about strategic placement of those cameras as well too. We signed a contract with Elite back in April 2018 to do this. And this is just putting the conduit in to make them functional. And then I spent a moment too, just because I couldn't recall, but I was on Gamut from the district, and I looked at AR that we have that does speak about installing surveillance systems. So there's some current language in your board policies and ARs that speak to including surveillance systems as part of the overall safety plan. But I don't disagree, Jeremy, that strategically if we're gonna do that, is it a consistent message in our security plans for our sites that says inclusive of these security systems?
Yeah, I must say that I've missed it. It's my bad. But now that it's come to my attention, I would like to discuss it. I'm just wondering, as it is sort of late, if we want to, I would prefer not to approve this now, but do we need to in terms of the larger?
You know, contracting approved, Jeremy, so in order for them to install it, then the power has to be there for it. And the other thing, what I recall too, is just as a suggestion, that this was intended to be a pilot so that we can learn from what's the benefit of doing this installation. And that's just, you know, off the top of my head, Jeremy, what I recall, some of the dialogue was that we do a pilot of this. And I would just also suggest to you, in terms of the number of cameras we're doing here, relative to that some surveillance systems that some districts have in place, this is relatively small, but it's a pilot intended to help us initiate that conversation, I think, on a much grander scale, what that should be. So can this help inform us as to what benefit we receive from a pilot within the district before we roll it out to all our campuses?
Can I ask a question just to your clarity? As I understand this particular system, it's we've had unsuccessful camera systems on our campuses. We've had systems that they're so blurry it doesn't help identify anything or anybody. It hasn't been a deterrent. This particular system, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, it's AI and
artificial intelligence.
And if someone is in the doing something they shouldn't be doing, and it's identified, and then a monitoring system, someone comes on and talks to that person through the camera to let them know that I can say, hey, you in the blue hat.
There's some fun.
You were not supposed to be showering behind the food services system on the back of the Harvard High School campus.
There's 100 pre-programmed messages.
No, actually, the artificial intelligence sends it to a real person, correct?
Yeah, so the way it works is it's...
Is it like Ring, the doorbell?
Programs, and it's a learning system. So it picks up on custodial path of travel, student path of travel during certain times. Somebody monitors it. They deem it as an appropriate pathway and or an acceptable. But what it does is it's constantly learning, and it'll send alerts when it's like, hey, this person's like walking weird through this area. They send it to a real person. They look at the screen. Just as Chris says, they indicate you in the pretty sure police has been notified. And the thing that not only is great about this program, but sheriffs, SCPD really like about it, is that they have a person on the phone saying, yes, he ran this direction, this is a description, you know, we made verbal commands, and they've fleed the area eastbound down that fence. So, yeah, I looked it up April 18th, we approved the lead. This is a one-year contract as a pilot, and it's my understanding from what I remember when Trevor presented, it's actually a lot less than we pay in security to have somebody on site that's ineffective currently. So
we've been paying a lot to First Alarm to provide security on especially our high school campuses and at Natural Bridges, and it hasn't been very effective.
And we'll revisit this when to decide whether we're going to expand.
So it's a one-year contract, Jeremy? So I think as we look through modernization of our campuses, we want to talk about security. We're talking about door hardware with you shortly. And I think that when we look to the effectiveness of this, then we want to talk about what that price might be. If we wanted to utilize this at other campuses, what that price might be. And whether we wanted to use an independent service to help us with that, whether we want to provide technology just our team accesses, whether we want to use artificial intelligence, or whether we want to use just a static system that folks have access to.
Okay, it was Dee Dee, Deb, and then Sheila.
So moving forward, as you play out this piloting program, I would be interested in knowing how long is the video feed stored, because we are talking about minors, and how are we communicating with parents so that they're aware that their children are being videotaped for safety purposes. And what happens to that video feed after a certain period of time?
So my, just to answer your question really quickly, Dee, my understanding is that it's configurable in terms of the amount of time you want to store the information. So you want to have it for a week or 24 hours, then it's configurable. My understanding as well, too, is that we need to have signage that says explicitly that. You can't videotape on campuses without signage. Mm-hmm. You can't have video in a classroom, you can't have video on campus without the permit sign. So you're absolutely right. We have to have signage out that says video cameras being used on this premises for security purposes, and you know, and it's being monitored. We have to do that, so that'll accompany this. I think those are two questions.
Yeah, and the parents will be aware.
That's
parents
right.
aren't roaming around the campus
right,
to
right,
see
right.
the signage, but they
yeah,
need
yeah.
to be aware.
Yeah, so I'm going to put that in the parent.
And just to add on to that, time that the system is active is customizable. So we can go from 3 p.m. till, you know, 7:30.
Mm-hmm. So the peak time is when we need that
security. Yeah.
Not during school time.
Yeah, we can customize it for
But it's still there, and it has the capability to, even though the time is not.
So it will remain in a passive mode until we indicate we log into our portal, we need to look at this area, and then it activates and it begins.
Right. So it's not.
Deb has the next question.
Just my question is more, it's less philosophical about the policy, but infrastructure-wise, it's pilot. We're spending $36,000. I'm assuming we're running cable somewhere. So if we decide not to use this program for whatever purposes, we've got infrastructure in place for lights or some other thing.
This is Cat 6, so it's power over IP. So
I have no idea what that
means.
Yeah.
we're not running conducting cables.
Okay.
It's very low voltage.
So it's specifically for this purpose.
It's specifically to cameras. But if we wanted to, we could install cameras that are district purchased, and we can own the system.
Okay.
But yeah, just to add on what Pat was saying in the beginning, we did have a consultant come out, and they, with input from the school site and taking a look at incident reports from the past, that's where they were able to design their layout.
Thank you.
Sheila?
Okay, so I just want to understand this a little bit better. I used to be on the Downtown Commission in Santa Cruz, and the issue of cameras, like Chris said, it was like a disaster in the sense that, you know, you had more footage than you ever could look at. You didn't have people
you know, you did, people could break it. It was all that kind of stuff. So this sounds to me like something very different, but it's something I'm trying to understand. There's, you say it like there's somebody somewhere. Who is this somebody, and where are they? And does that actually hold up in a court of law, that somebody somewhere saw your people at Harbor High?
Well, the footage would hold up. As Chris said, Sheila, the police likes to house it. There's been vandalism on your campus. If it spray paints all over the place, or someone in the community does that, then the police like the fact that you have that. So there's benefit. And I know that personally, I know in my former district we used footage associated with vandalism, and we retrieved funding associated because we were able to identify somebody who did this crime. So that's
so,
just
but
an
it's
example.
Only on when there is somebody watching, right? I mean, it's passive until it becomes active, and it becomes active when there's someone who can say, "Hey, you."
If there's motion, if you want, you could. I think it's. I don't know for certain, Sheila, but I believe what you can do is say, "Just run that camera, have it on from 8 at night to 6 in the morning. Just leave it on. Don't wait for the motion sensor triggered. Just let it keep running." And we'll run the tape, and we'll capture what the cat runs by. We'll capture that.
Well, so that's very different than actually having somebody who addresses, like, says you're in the wrong place or that kind of thing. Because that was the problem we had. Was then you ended up with tons and tons and tons of tape because you ran it all the time trying to catch something, and then you know you never could. Practically speaking, they couldn't afford to have anybody look at the tapes.
Well, I think Sheila. So yeah. I suppose that's to be determined in terms of how much foot traffic is going through that section of campus out by Amy's office where people are showering and other things.
Uh-huh.
Really, I mean, so
is that what brought this up? That started it was because of that incident?
There's a lot of foot traffic that comes up through that corridor, too.
Yeah.
By the transportation yard that's there, there's a lot.
All right.
I mean, I've been there late at night, and I see people riding bikes through there, and you know, you got some foot traffic going through there.
Yeah, I have nothing against the idea. I'm just.
But I think that the technical answer to your question, Sheila, is that they're signed up for it, and if there's, you know, 100 people that walk by there at night, and there's someone on their side that's supposed to be monitoring that, and they have to tell 100 people
it.
You need to get off the property.
Yeah.
It's. I guess we're gonna find out when we find out when we start the camera.
Yeah.
Josh, your turn.
I don't know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So you guys. You guys have like touched on running it from like not during school hours, and I was just wondering, is there a price differential in running it like all day, every day, than a certain time period, aside from like there being tons of footage? Because like you could be using this, like how you touched on spray painting and like interdisciplinary actions for the students, aside from like possible effects on campus too.
I think the technical answer to your question is I think you could run it 24/7 if you wanted to.
But you might have the ACLU on your back if you did a trade school.
You're late for class, Johnny. Better hurry up.
Okay, is there any, are there any comments from the public or questions? All right, it is an action item.
Move for adoption.
Thank
second.
You.
And who was the second?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, and... Yeah,
the second was Deb or Dee?
It was both of us.
Okay.
It was Deb Dee.
Okay, it's a roll call.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Are we needing a break? Sounds like things are kind of falling apart.
Keep going.
Okay, let's
just
focus, okay?
Focus.
All right. Our next item is new business resolution for Administrator Appreciation Week.
Yes. We recommend that we approve Resolution 041819 to acknowledge our administrators in the district during the week of October 22nd to October 26th.
Are there any questions? Comments from the public? The motion?
Move approval.
And second? Okay, Cindy? So roll call?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Next one is a resolution for Teacher Appreciation Week.
Yes, we recommend Resolution 051819 to acknowledge our staff our teaching staff for their service to students during the week of May 6th through the 10th, 2019. That's Teacher Appreciation Week.
Okay.
Sorry.
Question?
Just a quick question on the dates. Our layoff notice by law does not coincide with either the teachers or the classified recognition weeks.
I'm sorry, Patty, can you say that one
more time? My question is that by law we have to state layoff notices during a certain particular time. I'd like to make sure that our recognition weeks do not overlap our layoff notice weeks.
I say it every time. Thank you.
Okay. Comments from the public? Motion?
Move approval.
Second?
Aye.
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 Aye. And our next one is Classified Employee Appreciation Week.
Yes. Our last resolution is 061819 to acknowledge our classified staff for their service to students. And this would be May 20th to 24th and deemed as Classified Employee Appreciation Week.
Okay, questions? Comments or questions? Motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Introduced first.
Phoebe and Patty.
Phoebe and Patty.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. All right, we're moving on. We're moving faster now. Superintendent's goals, the next item.
Okay. We all went over this really closely in closed session. Would you like me to go through it more swiftly, given the hour tonight, or how would you like me to approach this?
You're looking for a number of seconds?
Yeah.
I'm about entertaining it.
Are there changes from what you saw?
There are no
before?
Changes from what you saw before. This is our public presentation of it. It is available to the public, and I'm happy to go through it with the bargaining units at our meetings. And I'm hearing that they don't need me to do that. So why don't I go through this quickly?
Also, let me highlight if there's anything dramatically new.
But
Sheila wasn't here.
Oh, okay. So, but she and I went over it when we met last week. So,
we're just thinking for the public as well.
Really, what we're doing is we're continuing to work to improve. We're working on continuous improvement. These goals reflect that. This outlines what we're going to do around goal number one with the curriculum master plan and our English learner roadmap, how we're moving forward with that. Finalizing our transition of the ROP programs, continuing to support our National Science Foundation computer science grant goals and outcomes, all on goal number one. Goal number two, working to refine and monitor our MTSS framework, our social and emotional health and the climate and culture of our school campuses, refining our PBIS programs, K-8, looking at and piloting restorative justice at two of our high schools and implementing it at Brant Sporty Small Schools, using the social emotional health survey as our universal screener, expanding that use this year, using data effectively at all of our sites. Dorothy's been hard at work with her team to look at how we're using data, how we're teaching our teachers to use data, and how that informs our PLC work. Again, goal number three, the MTSS framework for our academic programs, interventions, and supports, all the things we're working on, that RTI coordinators, instructional coaches, refining those models, using data in that practice, continuing to support skill and our site leaders and teachers around PLCs, expanding professional development for our classified team, finalizing the curriculum master plan with teacher input, and continuing our work on the California Labor Management Initiative with our bargaining unit partners. A lot here, too, working with the GSCFT and looking at our professional development planning and feedback to best support teacher efficacy, just highlighting some of these things, continuing to support the board with collaboration with our governance team meetings and our agreed-upon protocols. Working on the culture of state testing is new. That was in this one. that we want to work on the culture of state testing in the district is part of what we talked about at the end of last school year. For some reason, this one's going to come in this way. I'm sorry. I don't know why I did that. Wait. Maintaining a balanced and a budget-efficient effective management, again, refining our processes for budget and LCAP and DAC and working with our principals to monitor needs, review resources and expenditures, really, really important for us. Implementing our bond program, leveraging Prop 51 dollars if we can. We're working on applications right now. Beginning to plan and prepare for the renewal of parcel taxes. That's new on this on the agenda for this year. Goal number six, continuing to just work with our community in so many ways. There's not a lot of new here except for working on our communications calendar and our district office strategic communications work, which is new, a really focused effort from the central office team on strategic communication communication being tied to service and support. And the other thing that important in goal number six is that standard two, recognizing that's in the superintendent standard is really me working on refining my work to ensure that I'm meeting that standard in my service to the board and the community. So I think that is the express version of the question.
Are there questions? No questions?
Is there anything in the 91 for discussion for future possible agenda items?
Okay, well, I know it's on there.
I would want to reiterate, is it appropriate now, that at some point Pat's going to come back to us in whether it's next meeting or in a month and give us a time frame where I do think it would be appropriate as an agenda item sometime January, February, March to talk to us about and give us an update about how his team is going to try to tighten it. Thank you.
And we agreed to provide something in writing to the board about when that would be.
The time.
Yeah.
Okay. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We would worry about you.
I know. Ghost to show.
Yeah.
Ghost to show.
Well, the best of intentions.
All this endeavor.
Okay.
So for a short meeting.
I just talk so
Carolyn,
do well.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I can get mine. Kids are very excited.
Have an audience.
We have to wear his support game. I'll
talk to him. A little rough sometimes. Well, you would have an audience to show it to. I'm sure that my young adults would be like, what?
Good night,
everybody. Good night.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I want to thank you for your
Continued. Oh, here. I'm doing you. Oh.
Oh, you're doing. Oh, here. Let me leave a little stash.
Sheila, I couldn't even more tickled than when you said you liked the new program.
You noticing the hot and cold temperatures? Coat on, cold off.
I mean, it just changes like.
So if it burns out, then they're not allowed to use it. Well, put their name on it.
I'm so happy to hear that, Sheila.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's not working. Your student was great.
And your positive too. And besides that, you can learn it.
You know, it's true. I want to say also that I really appreciate it. I have a couple of new colleagues who are very, much younger than I am.
And
technology wise, just so knowledgeable.
They
really
help
you meet. So, yeah.
This is,
it's
we don't like it.
It networks better than very awkward. The exasperated young adults that are around.
You kind of do something with one hand, and you've got that with the other hand. Thank you.
Yeah.